for Bandver Racing Radio this Monday night, August the 1st. And joining me, it will be our co-host for tonight, Sal Sagala. Welcome to the show, Sal.
Oh, thank you, Sharon.
Okay, it's good to have you here. We're going to start in the first half hour with some short track news, and we'll follow that up with the Arca Menard Series and Sioux Chief's Showdown race at the Lucas Oil Indianapolis Raceway Park, and we'll include some Arca East and West updates as well. At 9 o'clock, we will have some post-race audio from NASCAR Xfinity Series winner A.J. Allmendinger. He's the driver of the number 16 Colic Racing Chevrolet. Earlier today, you may have seen me have Grant Enfinger up on our promotions. However, when I listened to the audio, it was very low volume, and it didn't start until late into the recording. So that's why we made this switch to A.J. Allmendinger. Afterward, we will get into the review of the NASCAR Truck Series at Lucas Oil Indianapolis Raceway Park. And at 9:30, we'll get into the Xfinity Series and the Cup Series races at Indianapolis Motor Speedway's Road Course. 10 o'clock, of course, is our NASCAR Hot Topic Sound-Off conversation with the Bandver Racing crew. So with that, Sal, let's go ahead and get started with some short track racing news. Do you have any news you want to make sure we mention?
Nah, nobody raced. Everybody was off this weekend. I mean, they're racing at Madera, but I really didn't get a chance to see how the drivers played out over there from their MAPTV rates.
Okay, well, there's a couple things that are going on this week, and one is North Wilkesboro Speedway Revival, and Racing America does have some nice articles up about 10 things that you should know about the modifieds at the Racetrack Revival, but there's 3 days of racing from today through the 3rd. So through Wednesday, you can watch the racing at North Wilkesboro. And how they tell you how you can watch those races. They are pay-per-view races at Racing America. So if you are a subscriber there, I think you can get a little bit of a discount. But definitely an exciting opportunity to watch racing again at North Wilkesboro.
Yeah, I guess it'll be a good show out there, you know, if anyone gets a chance to get out there and see it. If not, you can always watch it on Racing America.
Absolutely. There's some nice articles here, too, about Tyler Reddick's win at the Indianapolis Road Course and kind of his roots of racing as well, and the fact that we had 3 rookies posting top 5 finishes at the Indianapolis Road Course. So that was pretty good to see Racing America covering that.
Yeah, Matt Weaver does pretty good with that. Yeah, he does real good with that, you know, with covering stuff like that, especially, you know, he came out full-time with Racing America. So he dabbles more in short track racing, but when it comes to the racing and stuff like this, you know, he really ups the ante with the coverage that he brings to the website.
He does. And there were some Cup drivers that were also racing in the ARCA CRA Super Series, and one of them won at IRP on Saturday. Eric Jones was able to outduel William Byron for that win. So there's a great article up about that as well. So some really good stuff over at Art Racing America. As we've been talking about, Matt Weaver does do a wonderful job of keeping everybody informed of what's going on in the racing world, especially at the roots level.
He does. He does a good job. That's his forte, is the short tracks.
Exactly. Well, there's still some racing going on Monday night. That's tonight at IRP. That's Indianapolis Raceway Park, or Lucas Oil Indianapolis Raceway Park. And Kyle Larson is pulling double duty tonight by racing out there. So if you go over to Flow Racing, you can read about that and probably even watch that race. So it's always good. That's why it's so hard to get some of these drivers on our radio show anymore. They're racing all over the country in some of these grassroots tracks.
Yeah, they're definitely getting their seat time in. You know now with the way the season is, going. They try to get as much what they look at as practice, but it's they just really like dabbling back, where they started at.
Exactly. This name will sound familiar to everybody. Rico Abreu. He fends off Madman in the All-Stars Thriller at Knoxville. There's a great article about Rico Abreu and his win out at Knoxville this weekend in the All-Star Circuit of Champions presented by Mobile One. So good to see Rico Abreu still having his winning ways.
Yeah, he's still out there doing a lot of stuff. I was talking with Bud Kading over the weekend. Saturday, we're talking about Rico and some of the stuff that talking about the things that's going on with Kyle Larson and him not racing the Chili Bowl this year, and the issue they have with some of the money that they're not. They should be giving out to the drivers, but it seems like they're kind of keeping it more for themselves. Bud was part of that too. He said he stopped going out there. He goes when he hit a couple of heat races, and he said when he got his check, he couldn't believe how small the check was. And I'm sure everybody's read about it. That's kind of why Rico, Kyle Larson and Ricky Stenhouse and them, have a lot of the Cup drivers have opted out of the Chili Bowl this year. They just don't feel, if the payout is worth, the week that they spend out there.
Oh, that's too bad. Moving on to some of the other races that took place this week, Anthony Macri invades I-70 and claims the Big Tazos All-Stars payday down in Missouri, Odessa, Missouri. So another good win to see.
Yeah. Still looking around where you're at.
Okay, out at Speedway, Indiana, Kyle Larson enters the USAC Midgets BC39 at Indianapolis. So he is a busy, busy driver.
Oh, yeah, he is. He's he's doing what he likes doing, and that's been, Kyle Larson, that's kind of, it's kind of sad when you think about it. Now he's doing all the races he wanted to do, but back when he was with Chip Ganassi wasn't allowing him to do all this racing. He didn't feel, it was safe, to let him, go out and race these sprints and, race the dirt. He was wanted him, basically, stay driving the Cup car, but, since he signed on with Hendrick Motorsports, Rick Hendrick kind of, loosened up the belts, and that's him. Because you notice him, William Byron's doing a lot of the pro super late model racing, and even Chase Elliott has done some different
things. And Alex Bowman, too.
Yeah, and doing some super late model racing.
Now that BC39 entry list is over 70 drivers, and there's some NASCAR names on this list as well. J.J. Yaley is one. Justin Grant, we had, I don't know if you remember, but we had Justin Grant on our show many moons ago when we were first getting started. Chase Briscoe is on the entry list. Let me see if I see any other. Michelle Decker. A lot of people know Natalie Decker. Let's see. Donnie Schatz, he's not a NASCAR driver, but a well-known name. Logan Seavey, another well-known name in the racing circles. Let's see, who else do we have on here? Ryan Newman is on the entry list. There's 70 people on this entry list. So Buddy Kofoid, a lot of fans will remember him. He's raced a few of the Truck Series races this year. So a lot of names on this list, over 70 entries so far, and I mentioned Kyle Larson being on that list as well. It's a dirt track at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway that they'll be racing on. So this is the USAC Midgets BC39 at Indianapolis Motor Speedway this week from the 3rd to the 4th. So
yeah, Sheldon
you
Creed's
wanna...
also on the list too.
Oh, Sheldon Creed's on there? Okay. Awesome.
Yeah, Sheldon Creed's on there too.
I miss Sheldon Creed's name, but yeah, there are so many stellar names on this list, and it's going to be a fun one to watch. If you have a Flow Racing subscription, you'll definitely want to catch this one. They put on a good event.
Yeah, it will be a good one to watch. A lot of days, a lot of heat races, you know, before they finally get to the A main. So yeah, there will be definitely be a lot of racing.
If you go over to flowracing.com, you'll see a lot of the results for the NASCAR weekly touring series. The Advanced Auto Parts weekly touring series is covered by Flow Racing, and it also includes the NASCAR Pinty series, and you can catch a lot of the race winners that are listed there at flowracing.com. NASCAR Roots Notebook, Katie Hettinger makes history at Hickory. So another article that you'll want to check out. It's actually written by Rob Blount. Remember Rob? Just 15 years old, now has the most wins of any female at the legendary Hickory Motor Speedway. So at 15 years of age, Katie is making some history. Katie Hettinger.
Yeah, Rob was another one that was a Speed 51.
Mm-hmm.
Was a Speed 51 for a while, then he left, and then I guess now he's back.
Well,
he's now he's back
with
the Flow Racing
field.
Yeah.
So, anyway, suffice it to say, there are so many great articles over Flow Racing as well as Racing America. We had Brandon, what is his last name? It escaped me all of a sudden. Brandon, who used to be at Speed 51, is now over at Flow Racing. And,
Brandon Paul,
thank you. We had him on the radio show several weeks ago now. And he does a great job over at Flow Racing, getting all of these articles and information out on the website so that everybody can be up to date with what's going on. They have what you can watch. They have the news, the schedule, upcoming schedule, results, and rankings for so many of the series. And, of course, another the ARCA Racing series is also covered by Flow Racing. So really, and the Modified Series is covered by Flow Racing. So they do a fantastic job as well.
Oh, yeah, they have a lot of different series going on. So it'll you always have like a buffet of, what kind of racing, you like, what kind of racing you enjoy, and, what kind, you want to watch.
Exactly right. Okay, it was a battle of the two Smiths on Friday night out at Lucas Oil Indianapolis Raceway Park in the ARCA Menard Series, which was also a Suit Cheap Showdown event. When the checker flag waved, it was Chandler Smith who bested Sammy Smith during his first ARCA Menard Series victory of the season in the Reese's 200. The margin of victory was 0.686 miles. That wasn't the margin of victory. That's the size of the track, 0.686 mile asphalt oval. The Triumph also marked Chandler Smith's third straight ARCA victory at that track, dating all the way back to 2019. So Sammy Smith settled for second, his sixth top five finish in seven ARCA Menards starts this season. Taylor Gray, who won the last two ARCA Menards Series events at Mid-Ohio Sports Car in Pocono Raceway, crossed the finish line in third in the number 17 David Gilliland Ford. Daniel Stye finished fourth for GMS Racing, followed by Connor Mosack, and completing the top five for Brett Holmes Racing. Then it was Jesse Love, Nick Sanchez, Raja Karuth, Mamba Smith, Greg Van Alts, who rounded out the top 10 finishers. So any thoughts about those top 10 finishers, Sal?
Yeah, it was a good race out there, you know. You know, Sammy Smith, you know, as a rookie, you know, still, you know, continues to show a lot of promise in the series, along with Taylor Gray. You know, you got the two Gray brothers, you know, who are, you know, racing in all the different series out there. But, you know, it's good to see, you know, Taylor Gray grab that third place finish. And you know, some good, hard, rough racing out there.
There are actually eight rookies in the top 10 in the ARCA Menards Series finishing results. So it's really amazing. Sammy Smith, of course, finishing second, was the highest finishing rookie. But very competitive race.
Yeah, it was. It was a very competitive race.
And those who watched it got a really treat because they really did challenge each other, the two Smiths, on the track. Sammy Smith actually started from the pole in the number 18 for Kyle Busch Motorsports and led the opening 88 laps, but it was Chandler Smith who was able to wheel his number 15 Venturini Motorsports Toyota to the lead on a restart on lap 89. Once in front, Chandler Smith would hold the lead for the remainder of the event, despite some pressure from Sammy Smith during multiple restarts and scraping the outside wall on the final lap between turns 3 and 4. So it was, I'm sure, disappointing for Sammy to settle for second, but he put on a good show along with Chandler Smith.
Yeah, it's always hard when you have incidents like that, you know, especially, you know, when you're, you know, you're trying to grab the win, but still a second place finish, you know, still, you know, it's a lot better, you know, finishing a lot lower where he could have finished, you know, especially after banging off the wall the way he did.
Exactly. Now, we have the point standings for the ARCA Menards Series, but the point standings for the Sioux Chief Showdown are not up yet. So if you want to go ahead and give the series point standings for the ARCA Menards Series, that would be great, Sal.
Yeah, the series standings are Raja Karuth still leading the points. Sitting in second is Nick Sanchez. Third is Daniel Dye. Fourth is Tony Breedinger. Fifth is Greg Van Alst. Sixth is Albert Balkin. Seventh is Brad Smith. Eighth is Sammy Smith. Ninth is Zachary Tinkle. And rounding out the top 10 would be Taylor Gray.
Yeah, only seven of those drivers have raced all 11 races. A couple of them, well, one of them have raced 10, and the other two have raced seven of the races. But only 1 point now between Raja Karuth and Nick Sanchez, and 5 points between third place Daniel Dye and the leader. Pretty tight race up at the top.
Oh, yeah, it's just getting tighter, you know, as the races go on, you know, they're getting closer and closer to each other.
They really are. And some of these drivers that have only the seven races, Sammy Smith and Taylor Gray, have amazing stats when you look at their average start and average finishes. They're actually better than the guys that are at the top of the leaderboard.
Oh, yeah, they are. Especially Sammy Smith, he's having an amazing season this year.
He is. He's got an average start of 2.4 with an average finish of 3.4, And then Taylor Gray, again, only 7 of the 11 races run, have average start at 4.3 with an average finish of 4.6. That's a lot of consistency for those drivers. But, again, they're not racing the full season. I would imagine we'd see those guys at the top of the list had it not been for the part-time schedule. Taylor Gray actually has 3 wins out of those 7 races.
Yeah, there's a...
Sammy Smith has 2.
Yeah. And Roger Krug has 0, and he's still leading the points.
Exactly. He does have the most points. He's raced all 11 races. It's all good.
Yep, it's all consistency. You know, he's only had 1 finish outside the top 10.
Yep.
You know, so that's kind of what's helped him, you know, only having that 1 finish outside the top 10.
It absolutely is. Keep your eye on the standings, though, for the Sioux Chief Showdown. They have 5 of the 10 races listed up there, but the race at Lucas Oil Indianapolis Raceway Park, the point standings are not up there yet, but if you keep checking, they will have those point standings updated. So keep an eye on that. Okay, now let's go to the next races. The Arca Menards Series will be racing this week again at Michigan International Speedway on August 6th at 6:30 p.m. Eastern Time, and that will be televised on MAV-TV. And keep in mind, MAV-TV and Flow Sport are merging together while they transfer the MAV-TV content over to Flow TV or Flow Racing. And MAV-TV is looking to redirect all of their subscribers over to Flow Racing. So, but you will be able to watch the Henry Ford Health 200 on MAV-TV if you have it, or over at Flow Racing if you are a subscriber.
Yeah, that's always, you know, I mean, if you really like racing a lot, you know, it's a good subscription to have. You know, because, you know, you will see a lot of racing, a lot of different types of racing. If not, then you know what? It's better not to waste your money, because you're just going to get upset, you know. You know, because if you don't, you're going to pay for it, you might as well watch it. You know, take the time
exactly
out to watch
right.
it.
Exactly right. Exactly. And what I do is I have it on my Roku TV, so I can watch it right on the TV, just like I would any other race. Okay, the next Sioux Chief Showdown event will be taking place on August the 19th at 6 p.m. Eastern Time out at Watkins Glen International, and that will be televised on Fox Sports 1. The General Tire Delivers 100 will take place on August the 19th, so mark your calendars for that one. And then... The day afterward will be the ARCA West race out at Evergreen Speedway on August the 20th at 6 p.m., the Napa Auto Parts ARCA West 150, and that will be available on Flow Racing streaming service. So mark your calendars for the next ARCA West race as well. And then following that, on August the 28th, we'll be talking about the ARCA East again, the Sprecher 150 at 2 p.m. Central Standard Time. That's 3 p.m. Eastern at the Milwaukee Mile. Again, that will be televised on MAV-TV. That ARCA West race, I don't think I mentioned the time. That's 6:30 p.m. Pacific Time. That would be 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time out at Evergreen Speedway. Your thoughts about any of these races, Sal?
Yeah, that'll be a good start time for it. You know, just to try and get, you know, as much in, you know, get it done as early as possible. I know out here sometimes we have you know, issues, you know, where we have too many red flags and the program goes way into our curfew that we have out here. You know what, and the fans start, after a while, they start getting antsy after a while. You know, 2-3 hours is about their attention span. So when you go past that, you know, you basically already lost them, especially when you have continuous yellows and continuous red flags. Just kind of lose, you know, lose the younger crowd that's just getting into it.
Yeah, that's true. Well, it's really good to see all the great articles that they put up about it, ARCA racing. A lot of times, if you're not able to actually watch the race, you can catch the radio broadcast over at ARCA Racing. And then they also have the Race Center, where you can get updates of the live action directly from the track. So just a reminder to everybody that this is a great resource for everyone. They also have all the broadcast times for all of the races. So you can always check that out as well.
Yeah, it's a Bible of information, basically, for the short track guys. So, you know, make sure, you know, if you haven't seen it yet, you know, stop by and pick one up. You know, read it, you know, and go through it. And, you know, you'll just be amazed at some of the stuff that's going on. You might even get shocked and find something around your own home that you don't even realize there's a track there.
Exactly. That's the cool thing.
You never know.
You have home tracks right in your own neighborhood where you can go out to the track and catch some of these fantastic events that are taking place.
Yeah, I mean, you'd be surprised. Like I said, there's so many tracks out there. And I know I've had people tell me, I didn't even know Irondale was open. You know, and it's been open,
really?
You know, for a long time now. Yeah, you know, because when it closed, they thought that was it. But then you realize that Irondale reopened, you know, since then under two different, you know, under two different management companies, you know, two different guys have taken it over. And they're saying, yeah, it's open. It's alive.
So get out there.
It's alive.
The
it's got, yeah, so get out there and support your short track racing guys again.
Exactly right. Okay, so we're going to go ahead and move on. I know we're a little bit ahead of schedule, but sometimes we need that time later on. I want to play some. I was again originally we were going to have Grant Enfinger's post race audio, the winner of the Truck Series race, but when I played the audio to preview it, there was an 8.5 minute gap before we even got to the audio, and then when you did get to the audio, it was very low volume, so I didn't think it was going to be quality that we needed to share with our listeners. So I switched over to AJ Allmendinger. He was the winner of the Xfinity Series race, driving the number 16 for College Racing Chevrolet. And he was able to bring home that victory. It was a big day. He talks a little bit about how he met his wife at that track a year ago, or a couple of years ago, I guess now, and what it means to him to win at Indianapolis Motor Speedway, and also having his picture taken with all of the past winners from all the different series that have raced at Indianapolis. So we'll take a listen to that post-race audio for about 7-8 minutes, and then Sal and I will give you our comments afterward. Are we ready, Sal?
Yes, we are.
Okay, here we go.
We'll go to the back and then to Jerry Jordan.
Oops.
I'm going to go ahead and start with post-race media availabilities. We are joined by tonight's winner of the Pennzoil 150 at the Brickyard, AJ Allmendinger, driver of the number 16 College Racing Chevrolet. AJ, your third win this season on a road course. How are you feeling?
Yeah, I feel pretty good. It's anytime you can win at IMS and kiss those bricks and, you know, be on top of the pagoda, and I don't care if it's Cup race, Xfinity race, IndyCar race, IMSA race, I don't know, summer shootout out here. Anytime you win at Indy, it's a big deal, at least for me. This place is special. I love this racetrack, and I thought, you know, it's kind of funny because last year I thought we gave the Xfinity race away, and you know, through the grace of God, we got an opportunity in the Cup race to go win the race. But I felt like, you know, we deserved to come out here and win this race, and we had a really good car. Bad first pit stop, but the guys rebounded the last two and did a really good job, and Just kind of had to pace myself. We had a lot of outright speed. I knew Bowman was decent on the long run, so I pushed pretty hard early there to just try to build a gap so I could kind of pace myself. And then at the end, just pray for no yellows.
Awesome. All right, well, we'll go ahead and start right over there in the red shirt.
All right, there we go. Steve Connolly, the podium finish. A.J. Allender Jr. once said that you don't know what winning at Indy means. Can you put into words what this racetrack means to you, now a two-time winner here? Just those emotions, if you explain it to a simple person.
Yeah, I mean, as I said, no matter what you race here, if you're able to win at this racetrack, it's something that will last in your memories forever. And that's what it's all about at the end of the day, right? It's great to do it in the moment and have the accolades and live it, but it's the moments after. Because I think especially in this business, sometimes we get, at least I'll say, I personally get lost in the fact that it's always what, tomorrow, got to be better. And for the most part, it's always going to be like that. But this place, when I'm able to drive in and see my picture from last year and we are able to go kiss the bricks again and share those memories. You know, Indianapolis is the place that I met my wife 9 years ago at the Indy 500. So, or actually technically at the Wild Beaver as she was walking down the road. But anyway, that's a different story. She hates when I say that. Technically, I was at the Wild Beaver. She was just kind of walking past. But anyway, to meet my wife here and because of Matt Collig and Chris Rice and all the hard work of the men and women, but especially Matt and Chris for initially giving me that call in 2019 when I thought I was moving to the next step of my life of TV with NBC to just do a few races. At that point in my life, I had 3 NASCAR wins, and I hadn't really snipped we had a couple of good runs, but really come close to truly winning a race except maybe Martinsville for the 4 years after I won my last NASCAR race. And it was something that 2 weeks ago we had a bad race and I was mad. Sunday I'm walking around my house pissed off and I walked up into my trophy room and my wife said, like, after the first 2 wins, like, hey, we're gonna need new trophy cases. And I was like, no, don't worry about it, like, we don't. I got like 12 trophies sitting on the ground. One of them's a Brickyard trophy. And so all this, I've been so fortunate in my life to have won a Rolex with Mike Shank, to have won Champ Car races, to have won a couple of Cup races. But, if I would have ended in 2018, I would have thought, okay, this is, of course, I wish I could have made a little more of it. But, heck, I've won in a lot of different race cars. But now, I've gotten to win a lot of races in the last couple of years. And 2 of them are here. And those are the most special races that I could possibly have. So can you put it into words? Not really. But am I cherishing all this time? Because, as I said, I left at the end of 2018 thinking I was, I'd won a couple of races in NASCAR great. I'd just be this really small dot. And now I have a picture hanging outside the racetrack. Like, it's pretty badass. And I'm so fortunate for it.
All right, we'll go up here and then to Bob.
Bruce Martin with Speed Sport. You're always supposed to look ahead, but today at 9 a.m. you actually got a chance to look at the history of this place. You're out there at the Yard of Bricks posing with the greatest names in the history of this facility. All the guys that were out there, did you sometimes just ask yourself, what am I doing with these guys? Because it was pretty – all the living winners that have won here, with the exception of Tony Kanaan, were out there today.
Truthful answer, Bruce, I didn't feel like I belonged out there. I'm standing next to Jimmy, and I'm standing next to Rick Mears, and A.J. Foyt's there. That's who I'm named after. I get to take my picture with A.J. Foyt. Ari Leindijk. I mean, you go on down the line, right? I'm Mario standing there. I said to Carly, I'm like, what am I doing here? I don't, like, this is... I don't know if I should be standing here. Like, did Doug make a mistake? It was like, hey, oh, it's wrong AJ. Sorry, I didn't mean to get both of them here. Like, that's the coolest picture I'm ever going to have in my life. And I got to be there because of something I accomplished, not just because I snuck in on the photo. So, like, it's awesome. I don't even know what to say to it. I really didn't feel like I belonged there. It was pretty magical. And I walked away and said to them, I was like, this is unbelievable. I just feel like I shouldn't be here, but I get to be here because of something we did. So, yeah, it's pretty special to be a part of that. Yeah, I agree. And, you know, those are legends, icons of motorsports, not of just this place, right? But, I mean, in general, they're icons of motorsports. There was 12 Indy 500s standing there. Literally, it was just 12 Indy 500s just standing right there between Elio and AJ and Rick. So, and numerous Brickyards and all that. So, yeah, that'll be the coolest photo that I have in my life.
I will go over to Bob.
Okay. Your thoughts about AJ's comments. For those of you that might not have been at Indianapolis Motor Speedway, when you walk into the track, it is an amazing feeling because you see these huge, and I mean huge, banners of past winners at Indianapolis Motor Speedway. And I can only imagine how AJ Allmendinger felt walking up to the track and seeing his own banner standing out there with all the other past winners. And then to be able to kiss the bricks with all the winners together, I can only imagine how magical that really was. But your thoughts, Sal?
Yeah, I can imagine. I mean, he talked about it, you know what, and that's really basically all he expounded on, which is good because, you know, for an open-wheel driver, you know, anyone that came from open-wheel, you know, IndyCar, or, you know, that's their first, that's their first thing is wanting to, you know, race it at Indianapolis. You know, Indy's just like, you know, it's just like, it's like a magical place. It was a neat interview, you know, to hear how excited he was, you know, knowing that, but how much he respects the place too, you know, knowing that, you know, that it's not a, you know, it's never a gimme when you go out there, no matter how many laps you have on that track.
And I think one of the things that's underrated about AJ as well is that he has raced more than just NASCAR. He's raced in the IMSA Rolex 24. He's raced in a lot of open wheel events. So IndyCar, I mean, it's just amazing. And how he thought his career was pretty much up. His racing career, he thought, was pretty much up, and then he got the opportunity at College Racing and how that has just rejuvenated him. I'm happy to see it. Okay, any thoughts about that, Sal?
Yeah, you know, it's, you know, especially what he's gone through in his career.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? I mean, he's gone through a lot. I mean, he's been through a lot. He's been through the mill. I mean, he's been kicked out of NASCAR. You know, he's been, you know, Roger Penske is the one that, you know, that took him back under his wing again, you know. And, I mean, that win, you know, any other drivers, you know, they talk about, you know, the win, you know, win over there, you know. And he earned it. He deserved it. You know, we'll talk about, you know, the Cup Series later on, you know, once we get back to the Cup Series at the end of the show. But, you know, he even pulled double duty, you know, and you know, really good guy to be around. If you ever get a chance to meet him, you know, the guy's really super humble. He just appreciates. He gets it, basically. He gets it. He appreciates it. It's not like something, you know, that some of the other drivers, you know, you talk to, you know, and it's like, yeah, you know, I belong here. But AJ put in his time, you know, he gets it. He knows what the sacrifices are to get where with what he started with his status.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think the other thing was the reveal about how he met his wife, Kari, you know, near that Indian, you know, while he was there for an Indianapolis weekend, and that that brings special meaning to that track as well. So he has a lot of reasons to be happy about winning at Indianapolis anytime it happens.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he does. I mean, he's, any of those drivers would, I mean, you see the way they are when they win. They just, you know, the win is a lot different. The celebration is a lot different. You know, the interview is a lot different. You know, everything is different, you know, when they win there. And it's funny because it started as an IndyCar track. It wasn't even a NASCAR track. You know, it took many years for them to finally have a NASCAR race there. You know, and for it to have that kind of notoriety, you know, the prestige, you know, like winning at Daytona, like winning at Darlington, you know, like winning at Bristol, you know, and you used to talk about, you know, some of the historic, even some of the old tracks that aren't around anymore, some of the old NASCAR tracks that aren't around, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Rock, Rockingham, I mean, Rockingham was a big win. Riverside Raceway was a big win. You know, and to think that the Indy just came in, you know, real late into the picture, you know, and it picked up, it already picked up, you know, the, you know, it's one of the premier, you know, one of the crown jewels, you know, and that track wasn't, it's not even built for NASCAR.
Exactly. Now, let me ask you, I know that we've had this discussion before because they were racing the rectangle at Indianapolis Motor Speedway, which is a pretty flat track. And now they've gone to the road course. What is your preference, the road course or the rectangle?
You know, my preference for the kind of racing that NASCAR does, I think it's more the road course. I know there's a lot of people that just hate road courses. You know, NASCAR don't belong on road courses. But I think the racing is a lot better on the road course, and actually I think the racing is a lot better at IRP, which I wish, you know, they would have a race over there at IRP like the way the trucks ran there. But as far as Xfinity, you know, I just don't think that the big track is not made for
stock cars.
It's just not made for NASCAR, for stock cars. It's just not, you know. And, yeah, I just don't think racing is as exciting as it is on the road course.
Okay. Well, there's been some talk about maybe alternating between the rectangle and the road course because for the first time, I mean, we've always loved road course racing, and I think it's some of the best racing in NASCAR this weekend, and we'll talk about this later, too, the exception. But I for the first time I'm hearing that people are tired of the road course racing at Indianapolis and they want to go back to the rectangle. So I'm sure there's going to be some discussion about alternating between the two tracks, which might be the best scenario. I don't know. I was there for the tire debacle at Indianapolis Motor Speedway, and as much as I like that track and the aura that surrounds that track, that was not a good situation. But I'm like you. I would love to see them go back to Lucas Oil Indianapolis Raceway Park. I've seen races at that track as well, and that is a fantastic track. I've even heard some rumblings about possibly having one of the All-Star races at LOIRP.
Yeah, you know, the whole thing with the, you know, you brought the tire deal. You know what? It's just, it's because there's no banking, you know what? And because it's so flat, it just eats up the tires.
Concrete too.
You know what? And what you're doing is you're asking Goodyear basically to make a tire just for this one race. You know, and it's hard nowadays because if you're anywhere close to watching short track racing, we're having issues with Hoosier tires, you know, getting us enough tires for our races. And last year, you know, there was a lot of races got canceled, you know, because we didn't, you know, there was no, we didn't have enough, tires for the race, and other tracks needed, other series needed the tires more than, you know, than say, you know, this track. So I mean, you know, we had that issue, you know,
well,
and I just don't know.
Manufacturers too.
Yeah, but still, even Goodyear had their issue, you know, trying to get, you know, tires out, you know, and
but the tires this weekend,
you know,
Sal, were pretty durable.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah. I mean, for the road course, yeah, they're real durable because, you know, they NASCAR's. I mean, Goodyear's done a, you know, a heck of a job, but you know, with their development on them, you know,
on.
I mean, we haven't had the. Okay. Yeah, we haven't had the issues that we've had in the past.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
with
I would agree with that.
You know, with the tires, yeah, we haven't had the issues, which is good.
Okay, we're going to go ahead and move on to the Truck Series race, the T-Sport 200 that took place out at Lucas Oil Indianapolis Raceway Park. It was the inaugural T-Sport 200. Grant Infinger was the winner. It's the first race of their playoff, and so he puts himself in pretty good position for that first win. At age 37, he's driving the number 23 Champion Power Equipment Chevrolet for GMS Racing, and he's back with his crew chief, Jeff Hensley. It was his seventh victory in 144 Truck Series races, his first victory and eighth top 10 finish this year, and his first victory and first top 10 finish in one race at Lucas Oil Indianapolis Raceway Park. Ben Rhodes finished second, posting his first top 10 finish in one race at LOIRP, and his 10th top 10 finish this year. Zane Smith finished third, posting his first top 10 finish in one race at Lucas Oil Indianapolis Raceway Park. Corey Heim finished fifth. He was the highest finishing rookie of the race. The Grant Infinger charged to win the first NASCAR Truck Series playoff race. He picked a fine time to win his first race of the season. He charged to the front on fresh tires after the T-Sport 200 went overtime on Friday night. Infinger passed Zane Smith for the lead on lap 206 of 207, and he went on to win the first Camping World Truck Series playoff. The win was his first at Indianapolis and the first since 2020 and the seventh of his racing career. Infinger's Jeff Hensley led the team opted for four fresh tires under the caution flag with less than 10 laps remaining. Other tracks stayed on the track, and Infinger restarted from the 13th spot. Another caution flag and another restart allowed him to make up ground with his new tires and put him into position to take the lead from Zane Smith on the last lap. Again, Ben Rhodes also got past Smith. He finished second. The 38 of Zane Smith finished in third. Stuart Friesen, fourth, and Corey Heim finished fifth. Finishing sixth, next was Tyler Ankrum. Through sixth place, there was Lane Riggs making his series debut in his second Hallmark Friesen Racing entry. He finished an impressive seventh. Then it was Ty Majeski, Matt Crafton, and the pole sitter, John Hunter Nemechek, were the remainder of the top 10. Nemechek won the first stage. Ty Majeski won the second stage. That was a return to the Indianapolis short track after an 11-year hiatus and was also the opening race of the round of 10. The 10 playoff drivers, three finished outside the top 10, including Christian Eckes, who finished 16th, Chandler Smith finished 18th, and Carson Hocevar finished in 21st. There were 12 lead changes among six drivers, 10 cautions for 78 yellow flag laps, and the average speed of the race was 69.961 miles per hour. Your thoughts about those top 10 finishers in the first
playoff?
Yeah,
you know, John Hunter Nemechek was not happy with the way Zane Smith raced him, you know, on the closing laps, you know, running him up the wall.
Mm-hmm.
Hocevar shot himself in the foot by going after, can't remember who the driver was, that he kind of nudged him in the back, and Hocevar went after him and kind of knocked himself out of the, you know,
running.
Knock him back down. Yeah, knock him out of the running. But, you know, it was a playoff race. You know, everybody's racing for the win. And, you know, grand entry, you know, gosh, what a call by the crew chief, you know, to put on the four tires. He just charged straight to the front. There was no way Ben Rhodes, Zane Smith, or none of them were going to hold him off. I mean, even John Hunter Nemechek thought he was going to have a shot at holding him off, but there was just no way that once Grant Infinger got out there, he was on a rail. But, yeah, the other driver I was thinking about was Taylor Gray, who got into John Hunter Nemechek. You know, he had some words about him after the race.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but you know, I'm sorry, Nemechek. You know what? You've been known to do the same thing. And these guys, like you said, racers never forget. You know what? Come the playoffs, when you really needed a friend, you got to go back and think about all these drivers, you know, that you treated the same way and thought that they'd forget. And then come the playoffs, you think, oh, since we're playoff drivers, you know, they're going to give us the respect. You know what? When you least expect it, especially on these little tracks like this, they said, it's going to happen. It's going to come. And sure enough, you know what? Nemechek got two of them, you know, one by Smith, Zane Smith, and the other by Taylor Gray, you know. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how the other races play out.
Exactly. It's never a good time to make enemies on the racetrack because drivers never forget. And the best time to exact revenge is during the playoffs when you can – you know, you can't win the playoff in the first race, but you can certainly lose it in the first race. So Nemechek needs to be making more friends on the track than enemies. And that's going to be one of our hot topics tonight as well, is the racing on the track, because a lot of these drivers that are coming up are really and I heard a lot of talk about this on SiriusXM today, the lack of respect that a lot of these younger drivers have for racing on the racetrack. And it really is a lack of respect for themselves when they do that, because they're indicating to me that they've got a lack of confidence in their own driving ability. We watched Noah Gregson and Ty Gibbs go through a learning curve, and they put on one of the best races last week when they were racing for the finish. And that was a fun race to watch. I enjoyed that race because it showcased their talent on the racetrack. I'd like to see more of that in the truck series.
Yes, but you know what? And not taking nothing away from Noah, but this is only one time that he's done it. Noah's.
I know. Well, Ty Gibbs, too.
He's going to lose it. Yeah, Ty Gibbs is going to lose it, too. And, you know, as we start getting deeper into the playoffs, They're gonna go back to their normal ways. It's just something that, you know, I think what happened was, you know, was Noah and Ty, you know, were just probably figuring out, we've had enough of each other. Let's get to the playoffs. You know what? But I mean, Noah put on a good show.
I feel like it was a better showcase of their talent.
Yeah, but I mean, Noah's a loose cannon. Everybody knows it. Even
I know.
Dale Jr. talked about it, and he's told him. And I don't see anything, you know, change going back to work with the truck series, you know, with John Hunter Nemechek. You know, Nemechek is going to be, he's going to be one. He's got a lot of people against
growing
him.
Growing up.
So.
Yep.
Yeah, he's got a lot of growing up to, but he's got a lot of drivers against him. So it's going to be interesting. It's going to be fun to watch.
You're right. But this is the learning ground for a lot of these drivers, and this is the time for him to get that point, as far as I'm concerned. Let's go ahead and cover the points report for the inaugural T-Sports 200.
After Indianapolis, So we got Zane Smith that is still leading the points. He's got 37 playoff points. 14 points behind him is Ben Rhodes. Grant Enfinger is sitting third, but he's already punched his ticket in, so he's on to the next round already. So Then we look at Stuart Friesen,
yeah, you might
want
to look at the point standings after Indianapolis, because Grant Enfinger is actually in the lead. He's got the one win.
Okay, I'm looking at the one on J-Ski. Points report, Lucas Oil, Indianapolis Raceway, parking on Road TS 200.
Yeah, go down. Let me see if this one is changed. Yeah, I know it says the points report, but if you look at the race page for the race at Lucas Oil and go down, they've got the race facts and then the truck series driver point standings for Indianapolis. They show Grant
Enfinger. Okay, yeah, here we go. Yeah, okay, here we go. Yeah, okay, so, yeah, that's right, I forgot. Okay, so anyways, the truck series points are Granny Finger is already locked into the next round with his one win.
Mm-hmm.
Second is Zane Smith at 2,079 points. He has 50 playoff points. Then you got Ben Rose.
He's 50 points above the cut line.
50 points to the good. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it's 50 points to the cut line. And then you got Ben Rose sitting in second, Stuart Friesen in fourth, John Hunter Nemechek in fifth, Chandler Smith sitting in sixth, Ty Majeski, Carson Hocevar, and then the two that are outside so right now looking on the outside, looking in is Matt Crafton and Christian Eckes. So there's only a 7-point difference between Matt Crafton and Carson Hocevar for the last transfer spot.
Yeah, there's also a couple of ties in here. John Hunter Nemechek and Chandler Smith in fifth and sixth have the exact same number of points. They're 24 to the good. And then Matt Crafton and Christian Eckes, who are below the line, they're tied at 29 points, just 7 points below the cut line. So a lot can change in these next races, but really interesting to see how this is playing out for the first race.
Yeah, it is. That, you know, to think, you know, that Grant Enfinger, you know, got that first win, you know, I'm sure, but John Hunter Nemechek was really heavily favored. So was Zane Smith,
mm-hmm.
you know, to win the championship. But still, Zane Smith is in second, and John Hunter Nemechek with the incident he had, you know, he dropped down to fifth. You know, so it's going to be interesting, you know, with the next race, you know, and how everything pans out from there.
Yes, indeed. So I can't wait to see what happens with the next race. The next race is coming up for the truck series. It will be at Richmond Raceway, so they will not be racing this weekend. Their next race is Saturday, August the 13th at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, and it will be televised on Fox Sports 1. So don't look for the truck series this weekend. They will not be racing this particular weekend. But we can watch for the Xfinity Series. Their next step on our schedule here, and we'll review their race. They race the Indianapolis Motor Speedway Road Course. And let me pull up my notes here for the Xfinity Series. The winner of that race, of course, was A.J. Allmendinger. We listened to his post-race audio a little bit ago. It was the 19th annual Pennzoil 150 at the Brickyard, and A.J. Allmendinger, at the age of 40, driving the number 16 Nutrien AG Solutions Chevrolet for Colleague Racing with his crew chief, Bruce Schlicker. It was his 13th victory in 80 Xfinity Series starts and his third victory and 17th top 10 finish this season. All three of his victories this year have come on road courses, and Allmendinger has won 4 of the last 5 road course races. It was also his first victory and third top 5 finish in 3 races at the road course at Indy. And Alex Bowman posted his second place for his first top 10 finish in one race at the track. It is his first top 10 finish this season. Justin Allgaier finished third, posting his 14th top 10 finish this season. And Austin Hill finished ninth. He was the highest finishing rookie of the race. So that was cool to see. Now then, I will go to A.J. Allmendinger had a dominant win at the Indianapolis Road Course. The Xfinity Series playoff is still six races away, but A.J. Allmendinger has already clinched one title. With his victory in Saturday's Pennzoil 150 at the Brickyard, the driver of the number 16 Colas Racing Chevrolet is the undisputed king of the road. So he is topping a lot of the other drivers with his road course wins. So that is a big accomplishment for him. In dominating fashion, Allmendinger won the race. It was, again, the third win, all coming on road courses. On Saturday, he led 42 of the 62 laps. In his first series start since 2018, Alex Bowman finished runner-up. It's his seventh career top five finish in 54 starts. Justin Allgaier passed for third on the final lap with Ross Chastain and Chase Briscoe rounding out the top five. Riley Herbst rebounded from an early spin to finish sixth. Then it was Sam Mayer, Ty Gibbs, Austin Hill, and Noah Gregson rounding out the top 10. Gregson won the opening stage in his series-high eighth stage win of the season. Josh Berry picked up his sixth stage win this year, winning the second stage. There were also eight lead changes among six drivers and four cautions for 11 yellow flag laps. The average speed of the race was 77.825 miles per hour. The margin of victory was 2.084 seconds. So your thoughts about those top five finish or top 10 finishers?
Yeah, once again, you know, AJ, you know, getting the win, you know, was huge. You know, Alex Bowman coming in, you know, from the Cup Series, you know, getting the second. But then you, when you start going down, you look at the Xfinity regulars. You know, Riley Herbst, you know, really had an impressive race finishing sixth. And Austin Hill, you know, continues, you know, his dominance, you know, with the top 10 finishing ninth, you know, as the top finishing rookie. But, you know, you got to really, you know, start to look at Riley Herbst. I know his name's coming up a lot as far as, you know, what could happen at Stewart Haas racing, you know, but I mean, that's all rumors, you know, on, you know, how he can, what's possibly going to happen, you know, if he's going to make the jump to Cup or if he's going to stay here in Xfinity next season. But,
I think it's a pretty fluid situation right now.
Yeah, him and Noah Gregson, too, because I know there's been a lot of talk about Gregson probably coming up to the Cup level next year. You know, there's a couple of teams, you know, that they have mentioned for him. But, you know, all in all, you know what, it was a good race. You know, Chastain continues to, you know, to be probably the talk of the town. I mean, you know, another top five finish, you know, jumping, you know, from the Cup Series into Xfinity car, you know, and, you know, just continue to be the, you know, one of the stars, you know, that as much as, you know, whether you love him or hate him for his driving style, but you know what, he's going to be one of the ones that you're really going to have to look out for in the future. It kind of reminds me of Jeff Gordon when Jeff Gordon got started. You know, he wasn't,
exactly.
You know, he was a train wreck, you know, and then once they're able to, you know, to corral
their
Gordon's
energy.
Talents. Yeah, and their energy, you know what, he was able to win a lot of races. And I think Chastain is going to be that driver, you know, that once they get him corralled and get him, you know, if they're able to, you know, get him under control, I think Chastain is going to be one one of these top teams is going to really want to come after and, you know, put him in a, you know, one of their, you know, rides, whether it be Hendrick, Stewart Haas, JGR, or even RCR.
Exactly. A few drivers had some issues and accidents. Jeff Burton finished 38th because of a track bar issue. He didn't really get too far on the track. Also, Parker Kligerman on lap 11 had an accident, and Ryan Ellis on lap 17 also had an accident. They finished 36th and 37th. Bubba Wallace had an engine issue, taking him out of the race on lap 28. Brandon Brown had a suspension issue, taking him out of the race on lap 58. And I think that's all the drivers that really had issues throughout the race. So really an amazing race at the at the track at Indianapolis Road Motor Speedway's road course. Okay, so let's go ahead and cover the points reports here for the Xfinity Series.
Okay, Xfinity Series, we've still got A.J. Allmendinger leading the points with three race wins, 17 playoff points. Second is Justin Allgaier. He also has three race wins and 21 playoff points. And then third, you got Ty Gibbs, who's got four race wins and 23 playoff points. And then, you know, you go to Josh Berry, who's sitting in fourth, Noel Gregson in fifth, Austin Hill in sixth. I think Noah, when he had that that penalty, I think they took, didn't they take points for him? That's why he dropped in the points standings.
Right, right.
Yes, so that's got yeah, the reason why Noah and Ty Gibbs both dropped because of well, actually, it was Noah, it wasn't even Ty Gibbs, it was just Noah all by himself that dropped because of what happened with the, and then he had also had that big fine. But anyways, keep going down the line, we go to Brandon Jones at seventh, Sam Mayer at eighth, Riley Herbst is still in ninth, Daniel Hamrick 10th, Landon Castle 11th, and Ryan Segan 12th. So basically, what you see is what you get as far as you know, making it into the next round for the first round for the playoffs. Sheldon Creed has a lot of he's got 50 points he has to make up if he's going to try and get into the if he's going to try and get in that's asking a lot. You know, unless he happens to pick up a win, you know, then you know, like they say, a win and you're in. Brandon
yep.
Jones got his win and got himself in, you know, so I mean, anything can happen down there, you know, but we really haven't seen that much out of Sheldon Creed this year, any promise, but
the
yeah,
second
we,
half has been a little bit better than the first half, though.
Yeah, he's moved up a lot of the points because he was way at the bottom of the points. Yeah, he has moved up
mm-hmm.
a lot.
I will say it is race 20 of 33 for the Xfinity Series, and if you look at the playoff standings after the Indy Road Course, Ty Gibbs is at the top with those four wins, and then you've got three drivers with three wins, including Noah Gregson in second, Justin Allgaier, and A.J. Allmendinger is how they stack up in the playoff standings. Then it's Josh Berry and Austin Hill with two wins. They're in fifth and sixth place. Brandon Jones with his one win puts him at seventh place. Then we get into the drivers that don't have a win yet, and they're in on points. That includes Sam Mayer in eighth, Riley Herbst in ninth, Daniel Hemric, Landon Castle, and Ryan Sieg round out the top 12. Sheldon Creed, as you mentioned, is below the cut line in 13th. He's 50 points out. Then you got Anthony Alfredo, Brandon Brown, and Brett Moffitt. If you go down to 16th place there. But Brett Moffitt being the most out of contention unless he's able to get a win, he's 88 points back. So really interesting
yeah,
to see how that's all shaping up.
Yeah, it would take Brett Moffitt a lot to, like I said, he's in a must-win situation along with Sheldon Creed is in a must-win situation.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't see. I mean, Ryan Sieg has been really, really. He's been really consistent this season, you know, and I think even more now. You know, he knows that he's racing, he's protecting them points. You know, so even more now, you know, he's a lot more, you know, careful. You know, how he races and what position he puts himself in. You know, hopefully, you know, he doesn't end up, you know, two or three wrecks, and next, you know, he's out and Sheldon Creed is in.
Exactly. The next race for the Xfinity Series will take place at Michigan International Speedway. The New Holland 250 will be on Saturday, August the 6th at 3:30 p.m. Eastern Time, and it'll be televised on Fox, USA. So you'll want to mark your calendar for that. It is an impound race, single vehicle qualifying, so that'll be interesting. An update on Brett Moffitt, who's weighing his options after running the last race for Our Motorsports at Indianapolis. A lot of people are wondering what's going to happen with Brett Moffitt. So following Saturday's race, the Pennzoil 150 have mutually agreed. Brett Moffitt and Our Motorsports mutually agreed to part ways. So to your point, it's going to make it a lot harder for him to make it into the playoffs this year. Moffitt made 80 starts at Our Motorsports, including 21 top 10 finishes. A replacement driver, though, for the Team 02 will be named in the near future. So watch for an announcement from Our Motorsports in that regard, and also from Brett Moffitt on what his future plans might be.
Yeah, that's kind of a well, I mean, when you look at how far out he is, you know, if you're going to make a change, you do it now, you know.
Yep.
Just so you know, whoever you're going to get in, you know, you get them started, you know, get them accustomed to the team. You're already out of the playoffs, so you know what? What do you got to lose? You know what? You have everything, nothing to lose, everything to gain. So, yeah, if you're going to make the change, you know, you do it now, you know, and start getting your new driver, you know, accustomed to the team, you know, because you still got a lot of racing left for them.
Okay. Another announcement that came out last week is Brandon Brown only running a handful of racings for Brandon Built for the remainder of this year. They've run into some financial problems, and he's unlikely to return to his full-time role in the number 68 Brandon Built Motorsports Chevrolet after this weekend. Brown was already scheduled to drive the number 47 for Mark Harmon Racing this weekend after having to step away from the 68 because of financial issues stemming from a lack of sponsorship. As of right now, with all the numbers that I've got in my sponsorship quarter, I've got to say that it looks like there will be other drivers driving the number 68. Says Brown, who is only 66 points below the cut line entering Indianapolis. So that's another driver that likely won't be able to make the playoffs, although he is below the cut line, but mainly because of financial issues there.
Yeah, you know, it'll hit you, you know, when you least expect it, you know, especially if you're not performing, you know, the sponsors are, you know, they try as best as they can to hook up with the teams that are winning, but you know, sometimes it's hard, but still, you know, sponsorship isn't cheap, it's not easy.
No, it's not. And drivers will tell you that is one of the hardest things that they have to deal with as a racer, is securing sponsorship so that they can keep racing. And of course winning makes all the difference in the world. But even a driver like Kyle Busch, look at the problems that he's having, and he's having trouble securing sponsorship. So sponsorship dollars are hard to come by.
Yeah, you know, and they're going to continue that way. I mean, and, you know, I don't see, you know, it getting any better, you know, before it gets worse, you know. So, you know, who knows, we might see a lot more, you know, drivers, you know, especially in the Truck Series, now that Marcus pulled Campy World Truck Series out of the series, you know, and you know, next year's not going to be the Campy World Truck Series. I don't know what they're going to name it. Who's going to pick up the sponsorship? But that announcement was also made this week, too, that Marcus,
Lemonis.
I forget what his last name is. Yeah, Lemonis said that he's not going to be sponsoring the series next year, so that's another thing that NASCAR has to deal with during the offseason. You know, who's going to pick up the sponsorship for the Truck Series?
Well, the rumor is it's going to be Craftsman Truck Series. So it sounds like Craftsman is possibly coming back.
So they're going to go back to their roots then.
Okay, let's go ahead and move on to the Cup Series because it was the 29th annual of Verizon 200 at the Brickyard this weekend. And Tyler Reddick, at the age of 26, driving the number 8 three-chai Chevrolet for owner Richard Childress Racing and with his crew chief, Randall Burnett. He was his second victory in 96 Cup Series races and his second victory in ninth top 10 finish this year. His first victory came at another road course, which is Road America. So a lot of people are saying we might have a new sheriff in town for road courses with Tyler Reddick. It was his first victory and first top 10 finish in two races at the Indy Road Course. Austin Cindric finished second, posting his second top 10 finish in two races at the road course and his seventh top 10 finish this year. Harrison Burton finished third, posting his first top 10 finish in one race at the Indy Road Course. And Austin Cindric, who finished second, was the highest finishing rookie of the race. Tyler Reddick had a convincing win in a dramatic NASCAR Cup Series race at the Brickyard with Tyler Reddick surviving a wild overtime battle against Ross Chastain, who, as it turns out, was under penalty for niggling the first corner to win Sunday's Verizon 200. Tyler Reddick won the race for his second win of the year, the first at the road course at Indianapolis and the second of his career. Cindric finished second, followed by Harrison Burton, Todd Gilliland, Bubba Wallace, Joey Logano, and the 16th of A.J. Allmendinger. What a run for A.J. Allmendinger. He fell out of his car after that race because he had issues with his suit, the cooling element of his suit. Was not doing its job, and he really was heat exhausted. Michael McDowell finished in the eighth place, followed by Cole Custer and Chris Buescher, who also had an amazing comeback after his car caught fire. Reddick started from the pole. He led 38 laps on the day. Dane crossed the finish line second, but he was penalized by NASCAR for cutting through the access road on the final restart and was moved to the 28th place. The race ended after the first overtime event, brought on by a late caution due to the number 3 of Austin Dillon stuck in the gravel following a spin. Stage 1 was won by Chase Briscoe, Stage 2 by Christopher Bell. There were 9 lead changes among 7 drivers, 5 cautions for 15 yellow flag laps. The average speed of the race was 78.511 miles per hour. The margin of victory was a 1.065 seconds. Your thoughts, Sal, about the top 10 finishers?
Yeah, you kind of wonder what was going through Chastain's mind. You know what? When he shot through the
he thought it was a legal move at the time, but he found out later it wasn't.
He slowed down. They said, "Well, he slowed down to come back out on the track." But yeah, that was a good one by Tyler Reddick. I mean, it was nice to see him get that win, especially since he's going to be leaving RCR to go to I forget what team he's going to, but yeah, he's going to be leaving.
Is he going to 23XI?
Yeah, 2024. I think he'll be taking over Kurt Busch's car. You know, that's another story. You know what? What's going on with Kurt? I mean, I understand he had the concussion, you know, and it's been 2 weeks. But, you know, you kind of wonder if there's something else going on behind the scenes with Kurt that he has to come back, you know, and, you know, they get behind the seat. I know he says the doctor has to release them, but is there a possibility that maybe he's not coming back at all, you know, and, you know, there could be some changes going in there, you know, with Ty Gibbs finishing out the season for him? Or
I don't know.
Come
I think
back and finish it out?
I think in this particular case, it all has to do with the concussion. Now, if he doesn't recover from that concussion, that might lead to an earlier retirement for him. But I do think it's concussion related, and he took a hard hit. And you got to wonder about Ty Dillon too, and the hit that he took from Kyle Larson. That was a very hard hit. And I worry about him.
Amazing.
But Yeah, he is. He is. I'm wondering if he's going to be cleared. He was cleared from the medical center, but that was a hard hit. I know he's got to be hurting this week.
Well, yeah, I was wondering. All of a sudden, he's racing, and I think it was Kyle Larson, like a torpedo.
Yeah,
you know,
it really
torpedo.
Was.
And I was like, holy
cow, they said it wasn't
cow,
a brake
man.
Issue. We don't know what it was.
And, I mean, Kyle even was on all fours,
mm-hmm.
up off of all fours, you know, in
mm-hmm.
the air when he flew into him, you know. And it just happened that Ty Dillon was there, you know. And I mean, you know,
yeah.
it was a crazy
situation.
It was a crazy wreck.
Yeah,
it was very unfortunate. You know, and then to have two rookies finish in the, you know, two rookies with podium finishes, you know, Austin Cedric and Harrison Burton both, you know, grabbing that second and third, you know, grabbing that second and third spot, you know, for
yeah.
the.
I really felt for A.J. Allmendinger. How he finished in seventh place, I'll never know. That poor guy was suffering in the car without the cooling system. And they showed the picture of him reaching for his water bottle, and it was empty. And he was frustrated by that.
Mad.
He was suffering in that car. And I know the team tried to tell him that he did not have to race. He could get out of the car, and they were more concerned for his health. And when they showed him getting out of the car, he fell out of that car. And they were
yeah,
giving
fell
him
right
attention immediately.
Yeah, he fell on the pit wall right there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, against the pit wall. So, you know, it's I think a lot of it was Saturday. And then, you know, who knows how much rest he got Saturday night after that win. And then it becomes Sunday, you know, due to get on a more faster car, you know, more laps and stuff. You know, it was amazing.
Yeah, well, if you're
a
SiriusXM listener, he is going to be on one of the shows later this week. I don't know if they said tomorrow or Wednesday, but watch for A.J. Allmendinger on SiriusXM. I'm sure he'll have a lot to say about what happened, but it'll be interesting to get his perspective.
Oh, yeah, it definitely will be interesting to get his perspective. Todd Gillen with a really good finish, you know,
yep.
a top five for Todd Gillen, you know, finishing fourth. Cole Custer with the top 10, finally, you know, make a progress this week, and finish ninth.
How in the world
you know,
did Chris Buescher finish 10th with that car that was on fire?
yeah.
Just amazing.
I don't know. You know, we sit back and we watch, you know, you wonder, you know, just like if I'd have been A.J. Allmendinger, I would have pulled in during that last caution because he said, he goes, I don't feel good. He goes, I don't have any water. He got bad. He threw the water bottle. He says, the suit's not working. And I'm surprised NASCAR didn't tell him, hey, you know what, dude, you need to come in because, you're a hazard out there.
Yeah, I was worried about that. What if that guy passes out and his car just goes careening at 200 miles an hour? I just was a little bit worried about him driving in that condition. Thankfully, nothing happened, but I was worried about it happening. Okay,
yeah,
there were
so
other.
Was I, you know,
go ahead.
Go ahead. Yeah, I was going to say
go ahead.
They should have done something.
Yeah,
they should have done
so
something.
Too.
Not that they should have pulled him out of the car, you know, and said, you know, you're a hazard.
Yeah,
I was definitely
worried. Okay, there were other drivers that had some issues. On lap 24, Eric Almirola had an accident taking him out. Lap 34, it was Loris Heseman, had a drivetrain issue, a suspension issue from Daniel Caveat for Heseberg Systems Toyota. He was out on lap 43. Lap 57 is when Kyle Larson had his accident, giving him a 35th place finish. That also took out Ty Dillon to finish 34th. Another accident with Kevin Harvick on lap 64 gave him a 33rd place finish. Alex Bowman had the damaged vehicle policy take him out of the race, giving him a 32nd place finish. William Byron had an accident in lap 79, taking him out. And that pretty much covers those people who had incidents throughout the race, giving them not the finish they were expecting this weekend. Let's go ahead and cover the points report, Sal.
Okay, the points points report, Indianapolis Motor Speedway road course. Chase Elliott still leading the points with 4 wins. Ryan Blaney with 0 wins is holding on to that spot, hoping that nobody grabs a win, another win, and then before you know it, he can go from second all the way down to 17th, be right out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Him and Martin Truex, because the way the wins are coming up now. So, yeah, Ross Chastain sitting in third with 2 wins. Martin Truex Jr. sitting in fourth with 0 wins. Kyle Larson has 1 win. Christopher Bell has 1 win in 6th. Joey Logano has 2 wins in 7th, and Kyle Busch rounds out the top 8 with 1 win. And then from there, we go down to William Byron, who has 2 wins in 9th, Kevin Harvick with 0 wins. Tyler Reddick picked up the 2nd win, sitting in 11th. Alex Bowman with 1 win. Daniel Suarez, who also has a win, and he's in. Austin Cindric, the rookie, has a win, and he's in. And Chase Briscoe has 1 win. He's in. And Eric Almirola, who looks to be on the last, might be his last season racing this year, sitting in the 16th spot with 0 wins. But then you got Kurt Busch, Denny Hamlin, who both have wins. So basically that pushes Chase Briscoe out. Oh, no, it pushes Eric Almirola out, and it pushes Kevin Harvick out.
Kevin Harvick, yep. If you look at the playoff standings after Indianapolis Motor Speedway, there's just 4 races left, and Chase Elliott still has the lead because he has the most wins. There are the next drivers on that list all have 2 wins, starting with Ross Chastain in 2nd. Then it's Joey Logano, William Byron, and Tyler Reddick, and Denny Hamlin. Then these next drivers all have 1 win. That's Kyle Larson in 7th, Christopher Bell, Kyle Busch, Alex Bowman, Daniel Suarez, Austin Cindric, and Chase Briscoe, along with Kurt Busch. He does have a waiver if he comes back. And then the 2 drivers sitting in very vulnerable seats right now are Ryan Blaney in 15th because he does not have a win yet, and Martin Truex Jr. in 16th, who does not have a win. Now, Ryan Blaney's 121 points ahead of 17th. Martin Truex is 96 points ahead of 17th. And as you mentioned, Kevin Harvick, 96 points back, and Eric Almirola, 156 points back, sitting in 17th and 18th. They've been pushed out because of all the winners. These next 4 races are going to be critical for Ryan Blaney and Martin Truex, because if anybody below that 16th place finish, that 16th place in points, wins a race, it's going to push Martin Truex out first and then Ryan Blaney. And to be 2nd in points, and because you don't have a win to get pushed out, is just going to be amazing. These next 4 races are going to be critical for Ryan Blaney and Martin Truex Jr. I'm really hoping both of them get a victory before somebody below the cut line wins.
Yeah, well, you got Kevin Harvick and Eric
they could
Almirola
certainly come up
with
a win.
You know, Stuart Haas Racing, you know, who could actually pick up a win, you know. How far they would go in the, you know, as far as the chase, you know, it's not going to be very far because they ain't going to have the playoff points,
right.
But you know what? Once again, you know what? It's, you know, you get hot, you get on a streak, you start winning races, you know what? And you can get all the way into, you can make the trip in Phoenix at the end of the season.
Yep. Okay, Sal, that pretty much wraps it up for us here tonight. Are you going to be at a racetrack this weekend?
No racetrack this weekend, but I will be next weekend. We'll be back at Irwindale again.
Okay, good to hear. Well, it's been great doing the NASCAR race review with you for Indianapolis, And we'll look forward to talking to you again next Monday night at 8:30 p.m. Eastern.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. Everybody have a safe weekend, and we'll talk to you all next week.
Okay. Take care, Sal.
All right. Okay. Okay, goodbye.
Good night. All right, it is the top of the hour. That means it's time for our NASCAR Hot Topic Sound Off, and joining us for tonight's show, first of all, is Andy Lasky. Welcome back, Andy.
Hey, thanks. How's it going? Nice to be back.
It's good to have you back. And also, we have Jay Huseman with us tonight. Welcome.
All right, Sharon, thank you. I thought you'd do a better introduction for our new person with Fan for Race. Oh, he's not new. He's just returning after how many months? No, I'm just kidding. I'm just playing, Andy. We miss you.
I know. I've been doing this whole airline training thing, so it's nice to have that over with. Nice to be back watching racing again. I was telling Mike this weekend that it had been, I think, probably 3 months or so since I was able to watch a live race, so it's been pretty nice to get back into it because that's rather unprecedented for me, so it's good to get back to the old routine.
Absolutely. Well, I believe it's going to be just the three of us here tonight, back to the early days, and so I'm looking forward to that. But we have a lot of commentary about what happened at the races this weekend and a lot of hot topics to discuss. So, Andy, why don't you kick us off here for tonight?
Well, I'll start out with one, and I think it's going to get announced officially tomorrow, but Austin Hill slated to drive an RCR Cup entry this weekend at Michigan, which I suppose may or may not have some implications for the team moving forward. So curious what you both think about that one.
Oh, okay. Jay, what are your thoughts?
Well, I know we had this discussion the other night as to what the promo meant. We all kind of figured it was Austin Hill. What capacity? I know the official announcement, like Andy said, is supposed to be tomorrow. It seems like it's already been released because it was breaking news and everything else. So, yes, that is for specifically the Cup race at Michigan. Will there be more with that? We don't know. I know Richard Childress did say that Tyler Reddick would be in a car in 2023. It appears anyway that they have, although he's still not happy with the way the whole announcement came and the timing of it and who talked to who and did what, still not happy about that, but they have come together as a team and said, hey, until that point, we're a team and we're going to go out and win races. And they went out and won, they won a race. I'll say it. They won a race. Another one. Whether it was a gift and everything else, I know that's another hot topic. So we'll just say he was the winner of the race.
Yeah, Austin Hill is anticipated to be a third entry for RCR this coming weekend, I think, at Michigan, is what I read.
It should be this weekend at Michigan.
And I think that's how everybody found out, because the entry list came out, and I believe Austin Hill is on that entry list. And that's how everybody's kind of found out. Let me just see here if I see his name on the entry list real quick. I might be looking at last week's. I'm looking at last week's. Hold on. Anyway, I believe he's going to be a third entry for the Fire Keepers 400 at Michigan this weekend. And when everybody saw his name on the entry list is when they kind of got a jump. He'll be in the number 33 car for Richard Childress Racing this weekend. So look for him to be driving that along with Austin Hill in his number 3 car. And maybe it's a second entry. Austin Dillon and, Tyler Reddick. Yeah, it will be a third entry. So a lot of people, like you said, Jay, we were anticipating that it was going to be Austin Hill. A lot of people making guesses. Maybe it was Ryan Newman or Kyle Busch or whatever. But I think it's going to be Austin Hill because it is his name on the entry list. I think it's a good move. They need to start developing who – I think we're going to see a steady stream of drivers that are coming in. Austin Hill is the most logical because they have the affiliation with RCR. And this is a good process for RCR to go through to kind of interview, if you will, drivers for that seat for 2024 at RCR that Tyler Reddick will be vacating. So I think Tyler Austin Hill is a good choice. He seems like the most logical choice, but I would not be surprised to see different drivers, including Sheldon Creed or even Kaz Grala, taking over that number 33 car in this year and possibly next year as RCR kind of reviews who they might put in to that number, that car for, I'm not sure what the number would be, probably the 8 for the 2024 season. So, Andy, what are your thoughts?
Well, I think the time is now if you're Richard Childress trying to figure out what the future might hold. There's been some speculation about whether or not Reddick would return to that 8 car next year. He is under contract to do so. Richard Childress was quoted as saying he would return to the car next year. I think even if you're unhappy about what happened with Reddick announcing his next team for 2024, the smartest thing you could do as a team owner would be to retain him and run him for the next year and a half because of his talent and his ability to win races, as he's already done twice this season. He elevates that team to a whole new level. And if you can continue to support him, and you can continue to, you know, put forth the effort to have him run well and win races and contend for a championship, it raises the value for that team. It generates sponsorship interest. It helps recruit the best crew members possible to come work for your organization. Tyler Reddick's success now, even if it's only for the next year and a half, has a direct effect on what happens with this organization for years to come. So I think that the best thing you could do is to keep him in that 8 car, put a lot of support behind him, and go do the same things next year as they're currently doing this season. And, of course, it's bittersweet. Obviously, I'm sure they wanted to retain him long term. Tyler Reddick, I feel like, has the ability and has the right to choose his next employer as he did. And certainly you can't fault him there. But if you're Richard Childress, I think you have to put the differences aside to go out there and do what's best for your team. And in this case, it's put forth as much effort behind that 8 car as you can, because for whatever reason, the 3 just hasn't been able to do what the 8's done this year. So I think you got to put your resources behind the 8 car and try to go win a championship. And if they do that, that just raises the value for – you know, what they could do with that 8 car moving forward and possibly recruiting top talent. With regards to Austin Hill specifically, great opportunity, obviously, to get into a competitive cup car for his first career start this weekend. Hard to say what this will do for the future, if this turns into something more or not. But like you said, Sharon, and I agree, I think that you might see them running multiple drivers in the 3rd car over the next year and a half to maybe figure out who the next candidate is for that ride, whether it be a development driver, somebody in the Xfinity series, or maybe it's an existing cup driver. You just never know. But obviously they've got quite a bit of time to figure out what the future holds. And I think that this is the first sign of that. Is having Austin Hill maybe run the first of a few cup races to see if maybe he's ready to make that jump or not.
Okay, Jay, your follow-up.
Well, initially there were a couple of things there. Initially, my thought was this is the preparation for when Tyler Reddick leaves, and we'll go with it being in 2024 based on Richard Childress's statement and the contract and all. We'll have to see. I know a lot of times things change, arrangements are made, whatever you want to say. To me, initially, with it being Austin Hill announced for the car this weekend, him being the one that has victories and has run better of the RC. I don't know if I want to say better, but had better finishes, put it that way, in the RCR car in the Xfinity series. That to me was the indication this is our guy for the future. But you guys brought up some points that maybe they do put different people in their cars throughout and evaluate. I don't know that I necessarily thought about that or saw that. We all kind of just expected it to be Austin Hill. I think he has shown why he should be. But yeah, take the outlandish possibility if they were able to get Kyle Busch. I think they would. And there are some other you mentioned Kaz Grahl. I think he has run Xfinity form. I don't know about Cup. So there are some other possibilities, and maybe it is an evaluation process. We don't know that yet. We'll have to see if they do run this 33 car or the third car anymore this season and who's in it, if that's the process they go through. Right now, all we know, Austin Hill in it for Michigan. I think that is a good step. Like I said, he's shown what he can do in the Xfinity series, been extremely competitive. And I don't want to discredit Sheldon Creed as the other RCR driver. This past week in another one, he had a good run going. Some things happened. He said that himself. Right now he is in that boat of just isn't getting the finishes of where he's been running, due to his own or due to his other. Just not getting the finishes. That doesn't tell the whole story. So I don't want to take away from him, but Austin Hill has had good finishes to include a win.
Okay. Now, I say I would not be surprised if they put in different drivers in those car, in a car, a third car throughout the remainder of this year and next year. However, there is another scenario, and we'll have to wait for the announcement tomorrow, and that's exactly what you mentioned, Jay. It's very possible that they may have already decided on Austin Hill, and what a great opportunity for him to make a transition from the Xfinity Series to Cup Series by racing some races in that number 33 alongside Tyler Reddick and to have an opportunity to learn from Tyler Reddick to kind of continue that momentum that's being built there. So I think that's certainly a viable option as well. We'll have to wait for the announcement tomorrow to find out if that is, in fact, what happens. Now, another scenario, and this is pure speculation on my part, I noticed Kurt Busch is on the entry list for Michigan, but he was on the entry list for Indianapolis as well. So we're still awaiting word on whether or not Busch will be cleared to race this weekend or what exactly is going on with him and his medical situation from sustaining a concussion. We know that concussions have a way of changing driver plans, and the other scenario is what happens if Kurt Busch does make an announcement that he's retiring because of the concussion and will no longer be racing next year. That opens up a door for whether or not RCR would release Tyler Reddick for an early entry to 23XI. And so to Andy's point, RCR needs to make a move now to decide who they want to take that seat should that scenario play out. Again, it's pure speculation on my part and kind of the outside chance that that's going to happen, but it is a possibility, and RCR needs to be prepared for that possibility. So you're right, Andy. He needs to start immediately thinking about who he's going to put in that seat. Either way, I think it's a good scenario for him to be making that move right away. So, Andy, I'm curious to know your final thoughts on this.
Yeah, you know, I just think it's an interesting move, and I think that it probably is coinciding with the fact that, you know, the 8 car is going to be available in the next year and a half. And, you know, Austin has demonstrated, you know, the ability to be competitive this year at times. He's got a couple of wins under his belt. And I think that, you know, for him to jump in a Cup car, they can help him get the experience, you know, needed to maybe go full-time at some point. Or, you know, maybe it means he's in a third car. Who knows what the future holds. But, you know, obviously they've got to figure out what the future holds. And, you know, I think that Austin, you know, has run well enough this year where, you know, he's certainly earned the opportunity to go out and run a race or two this season. And, you know, maybe it leads to more, maybe it doesn't, but, you know, certainly interesting to see what he'll be able to do.
Absolutely. Jay, it's your turn for our next hot topic subject.
All right. Well, and I actually I didn't get the chance. I was going to put it up on under the message board. I know Mike had the topic itself up there. I think Brian Eberle here with Fan for Racing actually had done an article on the finish of the race, comparing it to the end of a football game. Mike put it up. He put it in a little different terms, expressed his opinion. I think I'm going to let Sharon read those tonight. But
okay.
The finish of that race, the finish of the race for the Cup Series.
Okay. Andy, your thoughts about the Cup Series race and particularly the finish.
All right. So I was going to say the finish was wild, right? That's probably the best word to describe it. I'm one that's in favor of the road course. I know I saw a lot of negative comments about we should be on the oval and this and that. Well, the fact is I really do enjoy the road course races there. I think they've provided some great entertainment and some good racing. That being said, the restarts, in particular the late race restarts, were the equivalent of the big one at a super speedway race, because every time the whole field went down into turn one, you weren't sure what was going to happen, but you knew that there was probably going to be some spun cars, some beating and banging, and you knew that probably at least three or four cars weren't going to get through there, and that seemed to be the theme. I didn't really care for that, to be honest, you know, especially, you know, with your favorite driver in the fight there trying, you know, to get the best finish they possibly can. You know, I wasn't a big fan of that because I didn't see a lot of respect given. There was no give and take. I saw the 22 make a dive bomb move to go like six wide into the corner with absolutely 0% chance of making the corner. It was like, and I'm not just picking on him. It was pretty much the entire field that barreled on into that corner with the expectation of, I'm just going to lean on the guy next to me and hope that I make it through. And that was literally the mentality of everybody in the field. So I just think that, you know, there was no respect being paid to each other. And it led to some hurt feelings and some drivers that didn't get very good finishes as a result of that. It was pure bedlam, really, is the best way to put it. So I don't know what needs to change to improve that, because I don't know how easy it is to tell, you know, a field full of Cup Series drivers, oh, you need to play nice and race gently. You know, you can't race hard. Like, that's pretty much impossible. But, you know, I don't know. It's a great facility. It's a great course. I really enjoy both the Xfinity and the Cup Series racing on that road course. But the end of the race was crazy. And I guess, you know, maybe you guys are referring specifically to, you know, the fact that we had another controversial last lap in which a car was racing for the lead that was under penalty, and you know, that's now 2 years in a row that we've seen that. So that part of it I certainly don't care for. I didn't really like what happened last year. I didn't like what happened this year either. Thankfully, the right car won this race in Tyler Reddick, but given the fact that he was battling the most aggressive driver in the field in Ross Chastain, that could have easily ended badly, and we could have seen something similar to what we saw last year, you know. So thankfully the right situation happened and the right guy won and all that stuff. But I mean, it was another controversial finish, you know, with Ross taking the access road, coming back on track and you know, running side by side, battling for eventually a finish that was completely irrelevant for him. So it's just two crazy years in a row, and I don't know what needs to change to make it more like the other road courses where we don't always see this. Certainly really, really crazy. You know, definitely would like to see it toned down a bit moving forward.
Well, again, if you're a SiriusXM listener, Elton Sawyer is supposed to be on tomorrow And I'm sure that he will give us some perspective from NASCAR's point of view about what happened in that race. So I'll give it to you the way Mike Orzel stated it. And he said it was all in the race thread, but I'll try to put it concisely. The end of yesterday's race was an absolute joke. The race devolved into a clown show where nobody was even attempting to make turn one. For the second year in a row, the battle for the win involved a driver who was under penalty, and the only saving grace is that at least the right car ended up winning. So a lot of the same thing, echoing the same thing that you said, Andy. But I have to agree, these are premier drivers in NASCAR. They're supposed to be showcasing their talent and their skill. They are not supposed to be bumper car drivers. And I really get frustrated when I see the bumper car driving, and that's the best way I have of describing what was happening in turn one and throughout the racetrack. I could go out on a bumper car and try to race and be as successful as some of those drivers were being. I think it's an insult to the driver's talent and ability to watch them perform in that way on the track. I'm really insulted by it as a fan that they think that that's entertaining to us. It is not entertaining. It is not showcasing the talent of NASCAR Premier Series drivers. And why they think that it's acceptable, I don't get it. It's a disrespect not only for their fellow competitors, but to me it disrespects themselves to say that this is the only way I can win is to dive bomb in and hope I make it through. Excuse me. No, that is not the only way you can win. There's another way to win, and it's to showcase your talent on the track. And what it comes down to is the desperation of these drivers to get the points and to get that win in order to be in the playoffs. And I think it's especially desperate, I guess, is the best word I can put it at. This year because of the fact that we've had 14 different winners. And some of those winners are below the cut line. And so you've got drivers that are in the top 16 in points that are not going to make it into the playoffs this year. And some really top-name drivers. Now, they've had all season to make it into the playoffs. They still have four more races, but it's coming down to the wire. And these guys are getting very desperate. I know that a lot of these drivers are so frustrated with that type of racing and that lack of respect for anybody else on the track. And you mentioned Joey Logano. Joey Logano is one of the top drivers that thinks that it's okay to race that way. And he's kind of fermented, if you will, that attitude of winning races, and it's an insult. I think it's an absolute insult to think that that's the best way to win races. It's not. It's just not. And I've never been a fan of it, and I just think it was a disgraceful display of NASCAR's top series this weekend at Indianapolis Motor Speedway's road course. Andy, I love the road course racing. But I am hearing for the first time in a long, long time, people have been clamoring for road course racing. But after the spectacle that we watched this weekend at Indianapolis Motor Speedway, I'm hearing a few people pining for the days that we raced on the rectangle, which is kind of amazing when you think about it. That's how bad the racing was this weekend. So I'm going to get off my soapbox and give Jay a chance to give me his thoughts.
Well, again, we're coming up. All right, we got 5-6 minutes. You may still have to interrupt me.
Do you want me to make the announcement now?
If you wanted this early, if not, if you want to interrupt me, I'll keep an eye on the time. Either way, that's your call.
Well, I'll go ahead and make the announcement now because you might get on a roll. For our first-time listeners, we like to make an announcement around this time of the night because we're going to go off the air at exactly 10:30 p.m. Eastern Time. And when that happens, we will continue to record the rest of our conversation, but you won't be able to hear it. And we want to make sure you know how you can hear it when the show ends. When we finish our conversation here at Bamfa Racing, I will go out on Twitter and Facebook to let you know that the podcast is now available. And at that point, you can go to the podcast player at BamfaRacing.com and just fast forward to the two-hour mark, and you'll be able to hear the rest of our conversation as we continue to discuss our hot topics here. It's part of our bonus overtime material that's only available on the podcast. So again, for first-time listeners, we don't want you to be caught off guard, and that's why we make this announcement at this time of the night. So with that, Jay, I'm going to put the green light on.
All right, yeah, I definitely was going to be on a roll, but I got to go to some things Andy said and then you said, Sharon, before I even get to the topic itself. Andy said initially there was only one word to describe it of wild, but then he also used bedlam and crazy. Mike used a different word. I got a couple different ones in my mind, so there is more than one word. The other was I think he made reference to Ross being the most aggressive driver on the track. And generally I would agree with that, but as we saw, this was not one driver. This was, as Sharon put it, the entire field. I mean, that's what blew my mind, I guess. And what I wanted to bring from Sharon's statements, I know it's Indy. That means a lot to some drivers, to a lot of drivers, because it is the Brickyard in Indianapolis, whether it be on the road course or not. The desperation, as you said, with the playoffs the way it is. And then there are certain drivers, you use Joey Logano as an example of, that's just how they race. So all of that, yeah, I say disappointing. I mean, that was, you know, Sharon, you alluded to it. I mean, they didn't even appear to try. You know, watching it back last night, I think there were two or three cars that just went straight. I mean, didn't even lean on anybody else to make the turn. They just went straight. And I know Ross Chastain, and I never got a good shot of what he did. I'll come back to that in a minute. But as a whole, I mean, that wasn't racing. A lot of times I disagree when Sharon and I talk about a bump and run or whatever. It's not racing. That most certainly was not. I mean, that was a dump and run by everybody. You can't point the finger at one person. I mean, that was, you mentioned it, the entire field just opted to go in there full bore and see who came out on the other side. I mean, it blew my mind. And, yeah, I was rather disappointed in it. As I said, I think Brian's article kind of referred to that, too, of at the end of a football game, if you're down the – just toss it back and forth and keep throwing the ball around, laterals and whatever, to see what happens, you know. So the Ross Chastain thing, and I say this, I never saw what access road they were talking about that he took. My issue on this one this year with it was even the announcers, the broadcasters – weren't sure if it was a penalty, and he didn't get word of the penalty, or we didn't anyway, until after the race. Even as they finished and crossed the checkered, the broadcasters said they weren't 100% sure yet. They felt like it should be a penalty, but they didn't know, and it had been announced. Last year, Chase Briscoe, they said was a penalty. They supposedly relayed to him. He did not get it prior to passing where he should have stopped. And I think that was proven by whatever through communication. They had made the call. It got passed. It just wasn't in time to him. I do agree, if you will, the right car won the race. But you can't really say that, too, because Austin Cindric isn't even sure who he's racing at that point. I don't know what he was told, whether he was told that Chastain was likely to get a penalty and wasn't a factor. But either way, the fact that that car is there makes it different for how he races. He's got to get around Chastain and not just drive by him and he's going to pull over and move out of the way, get around him, and then run down your leader in Tyler Reddick. So we can't say that the right car won the race because there was a car in there that shouldn't have been a factor. And Andy ended with it. We don't like it. I don't know what the fix action is there because turn one is that way. We saw it on other restarts, not as bad as the green-white checkered, which obviously you're going for the win. But we saw that it get pretty crazy and wild on the other restarts, period. I think the first initial start of the race, I think four or five cars ended up going around. Fortunately, everybody there got around it because the other drivers were prepared for it and going to attempt to go around it. On that final restart, none of them were even going to try that. They just said, we'll all pile in there and whoever comes out wins, I mean, or gets out front.
Like dumping sugar in a funnel. Okay, Andy, your follow-up?
I actually do think I have a solution to all this for if we were, you know, to run the Jay Huseman Cup Series, is you run the truck to IRP on Friday night, you run the Xfinity Series at IRP on Saturday night, and you run the Cup Series as its traditional Brickyard 400 on the Oval on Sunday. Complete, and on to the next solution because I think we might have just fixed it. That's the only way I know to really fix this issue because maybe it's time to move on from the Indianapolis road course. Obviously, IndyCar has been doing it for years, and they've figured out how not to pile 20 cars into the first turn and wreck each other. So maybe let them keep doing that. And we've got plenty of other road courses on the circuit. Maybe it's time to go back to the way things once were 20 years ago.
Yeah, I've heard some rumblings about the possibility of alternating too between the road course and the rectangle. Now I know next year they've already announced that it will be the road course. So the first time they could go back to the rectangle wouldn't be until 2024. It's the first time I've heard anybody say that maybe we should discontinue the road course. I think seven is enough road courses. We don't need any more, but I do like the road course racing. I just did not like what I saw at Indianapolis road course this weekend. As far as the Ross Chastain thing, Ross Chastain has said that he felt that he was doing the right thing. The reason he took the access road, and if you watch the video, he goes straight while all the other cars are making that turn, is because he felt that he was trying to avoid a wreck. And so he took the access road to avoid the wreck. He slowed down, but he didn't follow the procedure for what he needed to do if he took the access road, and that's why NASCAR gave him the penalty. Austin Dillon, by the way, got the same penalty for the same reason. So I did put out a video that NASCAR showed during the drivers' meeting over on our team's board that gives exactly what the drivers were told during the drivers' meeting. And so I do believe there was a misunderstanding on the part of the drivers. It is confusing. I had to go back and listen to it a couple of times before I could actually get what they were trying to say. But I think NASCAR has to clarify that for the drivers so that they know exactly what they need to do under that circumstance. Because, as you mentioned before, it's happened twice now. And NASCAR, where they've had a penalty situation at the end of the race at the road course, and that falls on NASCAR to be more articulate in conveying those rules, because I forget who mentioned it now, but somebody mentioned the fact that even the broadcasters were not 100% sure of what was going to happen, whether he was going to be penalized or not. And I'm sure there were other people on pit road that probably didn't know either. And the shame of it all really is that Austin Cindric really did not get a chance to contend for the victory with Tyler Reddick. If Ross Chastain had not been there, that would have left the door open for Austin Cindric to be the one to contend for that victory. So Ross Chastain, I don't think he was doing anything that he felt was wrong at the time. Looking back on it, he probably sees, you know, what happened there and why he was penalized. But at the time, in that split second when he had to decide, how do I avoid being part of the bumper car melee that's happening in that turn and avoid causing an accident? And his option at that split second was to take that access road. So the confusion, I think, came in when it came time to, make the decision about getting back onto the track. And that's where his spotter or his crew chief should have been helping him too. But again, all of this happens in such fast motion and in a matter of seconds that it's hard to get all that communication in sometimes. And the same thing happened last year with Chase Briscoe. They didn't have time to get all the communication to him so that he could make the decision of what he needed to be doing on the track. NASCAR, I wish there was a way for NASCAR to make those decisions more quickly, but a lot of times they have to go back and look at the video before they can make the decision. And when you're talking about the last lap and overtime, their eyes are on all kinds of different things. And for them to look at that video and make a quick, it's really hard for them to do that. So it's a difficult situation. We'll have to see what Elton Sawyer says tomorrow on Sirius XM, and I would watch for that audio if you don't have Sirius XM to hear what he has to say, because I'm sure there'll be a transcript of it as well. But I would hate to be in NASCAR's shoes right now. But people don't want to see NASCAR regulating the drivers on the track. But the reason rules come into place is because people abuse the situation, and that's what we saw happen at Indianapolis Motor Speedway this weekend, is a total abuse of the leeway that NASCAR gives them. And I hope that we don't have to go to regulating drivers' intent on the track, but that was abysmal. And they have no complaint if NASCAR has to go to that point. That's all I have to say after the displays that they put on this weekend. Jay, your follow-up.
Well, I had my follow-up ready, and then, again, you guys bring up some things. I got a lot in my head. I'll see what I can get out here in a short time period. But first, Sharon, I know you were aware of it. Are you talking about Sirius XM? I got my Durango back today after the deer hit, and they repaired it. It looks brand new. They washed it, so it really looks sharp.
Wow.
And I got to hear Dave Moody. It was that time of the day. I got to hear Dave Moody on the way home. So, yeah,
okay.
Had a good evening, afternoon there. And I will be tuned in tomorrow for that interview. So that's one thing. I would like to hear that. You guys mentioned it, and I didn't realize it when I said two cars didn't even attempt to make the corner. I guess that was Ross Chastain and Austin Dillon. I didn't realize Austin Dillon's penalty was for the same thing. The shot that I recall anyway from it, couldn't really see it. You just saw two cars going straight along the wall. I think it's tough. I feel bad for NASCAR. Sharon, you talked about it. They got a lot they're watching. It's the green-white checkered. Going to come to the finish of the race. They're trying to watch a lot of things. The argument, at least on Chastain's end, though, could have been that he was forced off. I mean, there was no room on the track other than to run over somebody. So, yeah, you could say he was forced off there. I'm not going to say he was, but I mean, that is kind of a defense of, I guess his statement was, I was just not going to wreck my car. It's a tough situation. I'm with you. I wish it would have been a little more clear, everybody having understanding. But there were 40-some cars that understood you can't all go into turn one and just not brake and use each other. So what good would it do? But going to, Andy brought up, and it's been a while since we've heard about the Jay Husman Cup. I've missed that, really. Andy, your six action there wasn't quite right, because if it were my call, all of the series, and I hate to say that, all of the series would be at IRP, because I like the short tracks. But the alternating, I think it was Kevin Harvick is one that said, being at Indianapolis and not running on the oval or rectangle is a disgrace. I don't know if I'd take it that far, but I think there is something to that. I like the idea of every other year. I don't know what kind of work that entails. I mean, they obviously got to put up the road course anyway, so it's one year they don't have to. But I also want, I'm glad that next year they're going to be on the road course. And I said Roval, sorry, road course. Charlotte's is a Roval. But the road course, and the reason I say that is this was the first year with the next-gen car. Several of the drivers, as well as the broadcasters on their behalf, talked about this car with the bigger brake package and everything. They can drive in deeper and getting used to it. I am not excusing the last lap melee we had because that they had a whole race to figure that out. But some of that I think we'll see improvement next year as they get more accustomed to this car on other road courses, other tracks. So I will give a little bit, just a slight margin of a pass on that, but that in no way excuses the final one there. That was just, yeah, everybody just let it fly. And I'd be curious to see a video of how many drivers actually had their hands on the wheel trying to turn the car, because it didn't look like any of them did.
Okay. Andy, you get to bring up our next hot topic.
Yeah, with regards to Kyle Busch, you know, we haven't really heard anything new with regards to his future. However, he has said that he's willing to possibly take a pay cut to help move things forward. So curious what you think about that and if he's, in fact, closer to his future for 2023.
Jay?
Well, again, I apologize. I hadn't been on the site here tonight to see if another aspect of that same topic was, I believe it was Dale Jr. who made the comment. He watches Kyle Busch's interviews and how he carries himself. He seemed to be a lot more relaxed and jovial even when discussing this topic. So Jr. feels that talks are going in a positive and progressive way. Part of that coming out, we saw what came out that he was willing to take a pay cut. I don't think he's intention that he'd like to remain at JGR. Again, that sticks with the tie to his truck team of Toyota. I think he's been very satisfied. It's been a good partnership. And I've said all along, I think unless something drastic happened that they absolutely couldn't get any sponsorship or something, that he was going to end up back there one way or another. I mean, you know, him willing to take a pay cut, I don't know. I don't know what his pay is, but I think that shows, and maybe he's using that to show, you know, now I got something else in my head. Maybe he's using that to try and really say it's on them. I know he said that early in the negotiations or when they talked about it, made a comment to that effect of it's in the ball's in their court, not mine. So I don't know. But I do think he ends up staying there in the 18 with Joe Gibbs Racing. I really do. Like I said, I think one way or another, whether it be one sponsor or multiple or maybe even Joe Gibbs coming out of pocket. I don't know. I just feel like that's where he was going to stay. I know we talked about some wild scenarios. You mentioned earlier Richard Childress Racing, but I just felt like that he was going to end up staying there.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of scenarios with Stuart Haas Racing and Richard Childress Racing and all kinds of different possibilities. But let me go ahead and read what Mike Orzel said. Kyle Busch seems to think his value is higher than the market is telling him. As with any other commodity in a market, the value is determined by what someone is willing to pay. I gladly take someone pay me $100,000 for my car, but that doesn't mean the value of my car is $100,000. It's worth what someone is willing to pay me for it. Kyle Busch services as a driver are only worth what someone is willing to pay them for. So I know, Jay, you just posted something. I can't seem to find it right now. But anyway, I think that Kyle Busch has kind of come to a realization that he is probably going to have to take a pay cut if he wants to stay in the number 18 at Joe Gibbs Racing. Because he's not going to be able to race without sponsorship. Now, I did see somewhere that Oracle was the sponsorship that fell through. They kind of thought they had something lined up, and then it fell through. Now there's another sponsor possibility. We'll have to wait and see if that comes to pass. But I don't think it's going to be a single sponsor. I think he's going to need multiple sponsors in order to continue to race at Joe Gibbs Racing or anywhere else that he goes to race. So that's going to be interesting to see how it does play out. But Kyle Busch, I do think that he's going to end up staying at Joe Gibbs Racing because I think he's giving indications that he's willing to budge on the salary part of it. He's willing to race for less, and so that tells me he wants to stay at Joe Gibbs Racing. And I know they said they're going to try to do everything they possibly can to keep him because, and somebody brought this up when we talked about it before, where else is he really going to go? And I think he's probably found out by going to other teams and talking to them that he's not going to get anything more than what he's getting at Joe Gibbs Racing, and he's probably going to have to take a pay cut. I think he's come to that realization, and maybe that's going to kind of move the discussion along at Joe Gibbs Racing. I don't know. The option is certainly there that Joe Gibbs Racing is done with it and they're ready to move on. But they certainly have a driver to put in that seat if he does not come back. But I would think that they'd want to hold on to Kyle Busch as well. So, Andy, I'm curious to know your thoughts.
Yeah, you know, I think that the logical place for Kyle to be is right where he is, the 18 car next year. You know, if you look at some of his interviews this weekend, he seemed fairly relaxed, and I don't know what that means. Obviously, you know, someone's interview really doesn't tell what they're really thinking or feeling, but he seemed pretty relaxed when they interviewed him this weekend. And, you know, the commentators who have been following this made some notes that, you know, they seem to think that he was far closer to knowing what he was doing next year than he had been, say, 2 weeks ago. So, yeah, I mean, there's no doubt that he's going to land somewhere. You can't not have Kyle Busch, you know, be without a ride for 2023. That he's probably one of, you know, he is one of the top drivers in the sport. When you look at what he's done, what he's accomplished, what he has yet to accomplish, obviously one of the top three or four talents in the sport. So, you know, he's going to be doing something next year. The logical place, of course, is to remain where he is. We all know that sponsorship and funding sometimes can dictate otherwise, but I would be surprised if he were in anything other than the 18 car for next year. We've seen crazy things happen, though, in this sport, and you never know if there's some kind of an opening somewhere else. But at this point, I'd be surprised if anything other than where he's at came to fruition.
Jay, your follow-up?
Yeah, I think it was Mike sharing the couple things you mentioned there of Mike talking about. And I agree. I understand what he's saying as far as the value is only what somebody's willing to pay. But they have been willing to pay that, and he's still, I feel like, one of the top drivers. But if the sponsorship dollars aren't there, yeah, and he's indicated he's willing to work with that. The other thing you mentioned was of, I think going anywhere else, you are also going to take that pay cut and not be in most cases, at least at this point, the same equivalent equipment that Joe Gibbs Racing has. I know Mike likes to put Hendrick at the top for personal reasons, but Hendrick and Joe Gibbs Racing with, you can make an argument for Trackhouse, I'm not going to get into that, but those are the top two big organizations. You know, whether they're on hitting on all eight cylinders all the time, maybe not, but they do provide the best equipment. I mean, from that aspect. So you, if you're talking about pay cut and going to a team that's struggling or not at the same level versus staying there and taking a pay cut, and then so many other factors, I think a lot of it does tie into his truck team. You know, he's mentioned that he's got to look out for the employees that work with his truck team and the relationship he has with Toyota when it comes to that versus switching brands. So it did appear, I would have to agree with Dale Earnhardt Jr., he definitely seemed to give a different interview and demeanor when talking about the topic. So that would indicate to me at least that he was more comfortable, whether it's a signed deal or an intent or just better rumors of a sponsor. I don't know. But I think they are on to something. And before I swap over there, Sharon, I know you said you saw it, heard me post something or saw it. I just want to do this one time. We got breaking news. Sharon did not take Martin Truex Jr.
Yeah, I picked a different driver this week. I really hope that Martin Truex Jr. wins, though. I'm hoping he gets that win before the playoffs begin, but we'll see what happens. I thought I'd go out on a limb this week, as if I haven't been going out on a limb. But anyway, I do think that, you know, you guys bring up some really good points here with regard to Kyle Busch. And I just don't have a whole lot to add to what you've already said. I do feel like he's going to be back in the 18. And Andy, you pointed out the other possibilities certainly exist, but he's going to be in the best equipment at JGR. He's going to be in the more familiar surroundings. He's not going to have to go through a learning curve of, you know, learning a new organization and all of that. So it's really in his best interest, I think, to stay at Joe Gibbs Racing, even if it's at a pay cut, and I think he's come to that realization. So, Andy, I'll give you the last word on that one, and we'll go ahead and move on.
Yeah, you know, I don't really have follow-up on this. I think that we just have to wait and see what the announcement's going to be. But I don't think this is going to be some wild and crazy move like we've seen in the past. I know we've seen some pretty wild, silly seasons. I don't think that's the case this year, and I think you'll find that, you know, especially with the big names, that, you know, probably going to largely in part be unchanged from what we already know.
Okay. We're coming close to the top of the hour. I don't know, Aunt Jay, do you have a quick one for us to cover?
Well, we didn't have it listed. I was looking. I didn't actually even see any others listed. But one I would like to address maybe as a little bit of a hot topic is being hot. We've talked about this Brickyard race. I know I've personally testified to it back when it was in July. A.J. Allmendinger running both races, won the Xfinity race, and I don't remember now where he finished in the Cup race where he came out of the scrum, but his cooling system had shut down, ran the whole race, did basically literally fall out of the car when he was trying to get out. I know I saw, I believe it was his wife that posted, he has recovered, they got him cooled down. But is there more of an issue, or was this just a case of wrong weekend to be trying to do two races on top of the parts failure? They knew it. I mean, they talked about it during the race. He said, my cooler's not working, I need water, I need this when I get out.
Okay, Andy, your thoughts?
Yeah, it was just a tough scenario. I felt bad for him, honestly. I know that trying to get the best finish possible is the name of the game, but sometimes you have to take health over a race result, and I was kind of hopeful that they would bring him down pit road to just get him what he needed in light of the fact that his cool suit failed, and they didn't do that. I think he drove the whole last stage without drinking water, which is absurd. So it's going to sound a little critical, but I kind of found that to be a bit selfish on the part of the team. You know, the health of the driver should be more important than that, and I was pretty disappointed that nothing was really done for him. You know, I suppose he could have, you know, he is the one holding the steering wheel, so I suppose he could have just come down pit road and did what needed to be done. But I felt like, in this case, you know, trying to win the race was more important than the health of the driver, and then that was pretty unfortunate. I mean, I felt for the guy. I don't know that I've ever seen anyone struggle that bad, you know, with dehydration and lack of water and ice. So unfortunate that that happened, obviously. You hope that your equipment works properly, especially in the dead of the summer, but, you know, it didn't. And, you know, in the case where your equipment fails, you know, I think you got to take more effort in protecting the health of your driver. And unfortunately, we kind of didn't see that yesterday.
Okay, Jay.
Yeah, Andy, you mentioned it, though, that they said the team, and I don't know if it was Colleg himself, somebody did say over the radio of, hey, don't hurt yourself or put yourself in a bad position. Right, wrong, or indifferent, these drivers are drivers. We've seen it throughout history. I just recently talked to somebody about Ricky Rudd taping his eyes open. They're hard-headed. They're determined. You know, you said it. AJ made that decision. I know I heard somebody from the team, the radio transmission of, hey, don't hurt yourself, don't kill yourself. If we got to call this off, you know, we'll come back. We understand. We're, you know, you're more important than the car or this race. You know, that was AJ's decision, and I respect it, and I don't know if he knew how bad. You know, it's one of those of you don't realize how bad. You know, he said his cooling suit wasn't working. He needed water, whatever, but how bad it was going to be once he got done. Because you're running on adrenaline, you know, at that point, you know, we've seen no matter what the body parts it is, cramps or whatever, you know, the driver says, yeah, this is hurting me, but they really don't know how bad until after. And I think that's kind of what happened with AJ. You know, I appreciate his guts and stamina to even finish it. But sometimes you do got to make that call, like Andy said, of, hey, maybe just bring it in, and whether they could swap out a driver or take whatever position they were in. All I can say is, again, been there, Brickyard in July, is hot.
Exactly right. And I heard the same thing that you did, Jay. He actually, the team did contact him and tell him, listen, you are more important to us than this race. If you need to come in, you need to come in so that we can take care of you and your health. And AJ made the decision. The problem with that, though, is that AJ was not in the position to make that decision. He was suffering from overheating and exhaustion. And my concern was, that what are they going to do if he passes out in that car and he puts everybody else at risk? I wish the team would have taken a stance and said, bring the car to pit road now, because AJ was not in the right frame of mind to make that decision for himself. Yeah, I give him kudos, I guess, for perseverance, but I don't think he was in the right position to make that decision. I think the team needed to make that decision. They were not racing for points. They're not racing for a championship in the Cup Series. They could have very easily brought him in and taken care of his health. To see him, I was very, very concerned that he was going to pass out in that car, and it was going to create a big problem on the track, as if they didn't already have problems on the track. I think that the team should have made the decision for him in this particular case, and I was disappointed that they didn't, because I don't think AJ was in the right frame of mind to make that decision for himself. So that's just the way I look at it. Andy, you have a follow-up? Or is it Jay?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah,
no, I actually, you know, I'm glad you both mentioned that the team was concerned about his health, because I didn't hear that. So I apologize for mentioning that. You know, I'm glad that they were trying to tell him, you know, hey, if you need to come in, come in. But, yeah, sometimes you have to wonder if, you know, you instead of leaving it in the hands of the driver, if they say, all right, I don't care, man. Bring it in. Let's get this fixed. But I'm glad you mentioned that, because I didn't want to throw the team under the bus, certainly. You know, Colleg's a great organization with good people, you know, but it's just unfortunate that AJ had to endure what he did, because he was obviously in some bad shape when he got out of the car.
Yeah, I really felt bad for him. Jay, your follow-up?
Well, my follow-up's going to be to you, Sharon, of – and I'll speak as a male, I'm not a race car driver, but I am hard-headed. Even if the team says, hey, bring it in, AJ still got the steering wheel. If he's not in the right frame of mind to do it himself, what makes you think he's going to be in the right frame of mind to listen to somebody telling him what to do when he's going to say, I can do it? So I don't know. I understand what you're saying. And truthfully, you know, that is one, and I would hate for now having that position, but you bring up a valid point. If something happens, it's not just him or whatever, because there are other drivers up there, and, you know, passing out or to that point, even for one car, let alone many, NASCAR has that capability. I don't know what indication it would take for them to say that. I don't know. I really don't. And maybe next time AJ makes a different decision, we can't answer. Hopefully we make a smart one, especially you mentioned, I know India is special. The AJ is one that's really special. He said he'd rather win there than anywhere else, him personally. So I don't know if that played into it, but any competitor, we've seen it, you know, even if they're in the car and hurt or not in the car.
I know I mentioned it earlier in the night. I don't know if I mentioned it during the Hot Topic segment, but AJ's supposed to be on Sirius XM this week as well, so watch for that, because I'm sure he'll give his perspective as best he can of what happened there and why he made the decision to stay out on the track. But I think it was a foolish decision. It's, and I know these guys are hard-headed, and I get all of that. But if I was Matt Colleg, I'd be calling NASCAR and saying, put out the black flag for this guy, because I'm worried about his health, and force him off the track that way. I just don't think that it was a good decision to leave him in that car with the heat being what it is, the humidity being what it is, and everything else. I think it was unsafe for AJ. I also think it was very unsafe for the competitors, and I think that that's why somebody besides AJ needed to make that decision. Andy, I guess you get the final word there.
Yeah, no real follow-up to this one. I think I'm good.
Okay. All right, so with that, we'll go do our roundtable, and Andy, you can start us off with that.
Yeah, sure. CB14 fan on Twitter, and just want to say thanks for having me on. It's nice to be back on the show. It's been a little bit since the last one, so hoping to make this more of a regular routine like it has been in the past. And not 100% sure yet about Thursday, but I should be on for sure at least one show or both shows in the coming week. So looking forward to doing more of these.
Okay, that's good news, Andy. Jay?
Yeah, most certainly good to have you back. I know you haven't had that opportunity here of late. Been great having Tommy on, though, a very fresh and different perspective as he's come on quite a bit throughout the year this year. We still represent Mike, whether he's here or not. So love the crew we got here at Fan for Racing. Excited about Thursday night as we preview Michigan, getting down to it in the Cup and the Xfinity Series. As we get closer to their playoffs. And you can follow me on Facebook, Michael Hoosman, MoparMJ8 on Twitter and Instagram.
All right.
Oh,
and
I knew there was something else. I'm sorry, Sharon,
okay.
If I might real quick. Big shout out to Chris Buescher. The car on fire, they had sprayed it with the fire extinguisher, and I believe he came back and got a 10th place finish. I wanted to give a shout out to him. Chris Buescher with a burned up race car finishing 10th.
It's amazing that he was able to get a 10th place finish after that car was on fire. So kudos to his team as well for putting him in that position to be able to come back and get a 10th place finish. I am Fan for Racing site on Twitter, and Fan for Racing blog and radio everywhere else, including fanforracing.com, where we have our player for the Fan for Racing radio show. So I want a big shout-out to our listeners for tuning in to hear what we have to say on Monday nights and Thursday nights. And also a big shout-out to our Bamfa Racing crew tonight. That would be Sal Segala, Andy Lasky, and Jay Huseman. You guys always make the show a lot of fun, and I always enjoy hearing everybody's perspective. You guys always bring up great points. So thank you for all that you do. And, Andy, I'm so happy that you're going to be with us more often here in the next day or two or even next week or so. So we always welcome you on the show. And we're hoping to have Brian Eberle come on a few of the shows, too. So we'll have to keep him in mind as well. I also reached out to him for tonight, but unfortunately I don't think he was available. So with that, I don't have a whole lot to say. We did put up Mike's Atlanta article. That was delayed because of me having the COVID and some recovery issues. So that's up on the board. And if you want to read that, I thought he brought up some good points about the Atlanta race and some things that NASCAR may need to look at to make sure that we have fans that watch the racing that's taking place there. And I hope everybody takes a chance to take a look at that. We also had Sam Bornhorst recap up today. So, again, a big shout-out to our Fan for Racing crew. So with that, I think we're ready to call it a night, guys, and we'll look forward to Thursday night when we preview Michigan.
All right. Have a good night.
Do indeed look forward to that. Good night.
Good night, everybody. We'll see you on Thursday.